Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to our city council meeting on January 12th. First one of the new year, and we wish you a happy new year, and we're excited about this new year coming. Last year was a very good year for the city, thanks to our citizens' support and working with us. And we look forward to another great year this year with the same support. And we all have the same goal, I think, and that's to make our city the best it can be, the best quality of life for everybody, to improve that as much as we can. So again, thank you so much, and thank you for being here. This is our work session, and we have one item on our work session this evening, and it's Juilliard and Aiken. Mr. LeDuc, would you like to say more?
For the last several years, the preeminent school of arts in the United States, Juilliard, has been coming to Aiken, and we have formed up a wonderful relationship with them, and we would like to take that one step further. So there has been a great group of citizens working with Juilliard and would like to make a presentation to City Council on the visit they will be having here in March, a little bit about the organization that they have formed up, a nonprofit group to have Juilliard come here and to be involved in even a greater and better way than they have in the past. So we have, I'm not too sure, Greg, Sandra?
No.
The spokesperson.
Okay.
Sandra Fields will go ahead and talk to us a little bit about it.
Well, thank you so much for giving us this opportunity. It's an honor to be here, but I must admit this is a little imposing and intimidating. I didn't realize I would be standing on trial, so to speak, but I am happy to be here. I think perhaps the best way to introduce you to this event is to give you a perspective of Juilliard's past, present, and future relationship with Aiken. As some of you may or may not know, in 1996, Greg Smith and Steve Nathy bequeathed their Aiken house to Juilliard. And this house was given with the intent of it becoming a retreat and a southern home for future generations of Juilliard students, faculty members, and alumni. And with this various generous gift, the relationship, the very unique relationship between Juilliard and Aiken was formed. As Roger mentioned, Juilliard has had a presence during the past 3 years in Aiken. However, the ensembles that were featured were a part of a pre-existing concert series. And many of you may have heard the Juilliard Jazz Ensemble and the Volanda String Quartet. So it was a wonderful event. What we wanted to do was to enhance and increase the impact upon the community, because we knew, from my experience in working with the Volanda String Quartet and the Jazz Ensemble as their outreach director, I witnessed firsthand the tremendous impact they had upon school students and upon audience members here in Aiken. So Greg and Steve and I have created a standalone event which will feature and showcase multiple Juilliard ensembles throughout the city in public concerts and throughout our Aiken public schools. Hence the creation of Juilliard in Aiken 2009. So I'm bringing you up to the present. And I must underscore that this event is a history-making arts event because of its unique nature. This is the only partnership that Juilliard has created between a community and itself to create an event of this magnitude and scope. No other community in the world has Juilliard as its showcase, providing showcase artists for a music festival. So we know that their commitment to Aiken is huge, and we as a community are embracing them as well. During the week of March 9th, the 9th through the 13th, Aiken will host 18 Juilliard student musicians and a professional faculty brass quintet. And as I said, they will perform in various venues. And we also have an outreach program that will involve 10 of our public schools. So our mission is multi-pronged, but to put it briefly, we want to offer a variety of concerts so that people from every walk of life may attend. And we also want to motivate and inspire as many of our Aiken School students as possible. Therefore, we created the Aiken Music Festival Corporation. It is a 501c3 corporation, and we're in the process of soliciting corporate sponsorship and community sponsorship. We are so grateful to all the city has offered us to help us in making this an event, something that Juilliard will be proud of and that the Aiken community will be proud of. As far as the future of Juilliard and Aiken, we have plans that this will be an annual event. As the festival grows, we hope to include all the components of Juilliard, not just music, but dance and theater. I mean, can you envision a Shakespeare festival at Hopeland's Gardens, or a dance troupe at the Washington Theater, while, by the way, the Juilliard Orchestra is performing at the Aiken Center of the Arts? I mean, all of this is possible as we grow. What we do know is that we have a responsibility to protect and enhance the quality of life here in Aiken, and we feel very strongly that Juilliard in Aiken will be of tremendous benefit and pride to the community. So again, we appreciate your help. I will let you know that our formal announcement will be Thursday, January 22nd at 10 a.m. There will be a press conference, and at 11 a.m. And we will have Russ, you described the media participation. Yes.
We'll be inviting both television, radio, and print media from the Triangle of Atlanta, Charlotte, to Charleston, and all in We should get a pretty good turnout with the Juilliard grant married up to the Aiken grant.
So we are very excited, and it's upon us very soon. And so now I would like to hand over the podium, if Greg would like to say a few words.
Sandra, thank you very much for all your work and all of those in your team there, on your team. And we're on that team, too, with you.
Good. Thank you, Sandra. One is daunted by following Sandra to a podium like this. I only have to add that we did this originally in the 90s because we were concerned about the fate of the house on the open market. It's an unusual house. It's an unusual kind of property. So we thought, how can we ensure its preservation in the future, and what kind of purpose can it serve? And as music lovers, we thought this was a great idea. And Juilliard, after some convincing, agreed to accept the gift along with a suitable endowment. And really, that in combination with Roger's interest on behalf of the council in quality of life issues, and this dynamo who was sitting next to me in the audience, everything came together at one time, and that's why this all sort of bloomed in a hurry. We had foreseen it unfolding slowly, but the key issue for us, for Steve and me, was that for this to work, for Juilliard's home in Aiken to be successful, it had to have roots in the Aiken community. It had to feel like it was a part of the community and not just sort of dropped in from New York. And this was the perfect opportunity to begin to grow those roots in the community, was to have this annual festival. So we're thrilled and delighted, and look for any way we can to work with the council, work with the city, work with whatever entities, both for the festival coming up in March and for years to come, where we see, as Sandra outlined, a lot of new opportunities for growth and enhancement and education and working with the community and the schools and all that. So it's extremely exciting, and we hope you all will share that excitement.
Greg, we should thank you, too, for what you've done. It's a great gift of your home to Juilliard, and that's going to be... That's a major root in this tree, you know, that's growing here.
The great thing about that is that it becomes then something that will give will keep giving in future years with this kind of activity and these kind of educational outreach projects. Mm-hmm. This is something that will hopefully give back to the Aiken community for the 20 years we've been here. Believe it or not, it's been 20 years.
Right.
For the future.
Right.
Thank you.
Well, thank you so much, and thank the whole team for what you're doing. We all recognize what a wonderful thing this is for our city, especially to be the only one that's that they have seen fit to do this kind of thing with, in a big way. And so, obviously, you know, we're with you, and whatever we can do to help, we want to do that because this is a great opportunity for us.
Mr. Mayor, if you could,
yes.
In the memo that I gave you, I just did outline some of the things that we will be involved with. We will be providing transportation to from the airport. We have done that in the past. Obviously, this is a larger group, which is very exciting. We'll be providing the theater to them for this use. But as was stated by Greg and Sandra both, if you could envision what the future could be like with this, and our goal and our vision is to build on the success that we've had in the past and to allow this to even grow something to some greater amount in the future. So there's a lot of great things on the horizon as we continue to work with the new foundation that has been put together. This is the Aiken Music Festival. And that's exactly what we would like to see this become even more and more as a festival every year at this time. The city will be a part of this. So it's exciting for the city. It's exciting for Juilliard. It's exciting for those that have been working on this. They'll be providing a opportunity for hundreds and thousands of students throughout Aiken County. They'll be visiting different schools. Different schools will be coming into different locations to hear and learn and just be a part of that. And so I could see even great things for our students in years to come as they become and have a greater appreciation for the arts. So I hate to use the term, it's a win-win for everybody, but it certainly is. This community becomes a real winner for all the things and the great individuals that are working on this.
I have a question that I don't know the answer to. This is wonderful. I'm going to start out with that. I'm very excited about this. The Aiken School for the Lord Kennedy School for the Performing Arts, is there a link based on the kids that are exposed to the performing arts in terms of a visit there? Beverly, you may be able to answer that.
We have not been afforded a visit from the Juilliard School so far.
Okay.
But we are in the middle of completing our own facility. The arts building, we have just moved into the new school, but the arts building is not yet complete. We will have an auditorium and theater. We do theater, dance, and music at the school.
Just wanted to speak to that issue. When we were negotiating the week schedule at Juilliard, I visited with Michelle Connor of the Aiken County Schools. We worked together on the list of schools. And while it was not a long list, Juilliard felt that since this was a rollout, they wanted to be cautious about overscheduling and making sure that every outreach was a quality event and that there was a good fit between the personnel that we have and the school that we're visiting. So I feel that in the years to come, we will make sure that we include the Performing Arts School, some of the other private schools, and we'll broaden our reach as our capabilities allow us to do so.
Okay.
I think this is a good time for me to say that we're not a private school. We are a public school. We are part of the Aiken County Public School System.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sandra, question on that on this issue. Their students, or at least some of their students, will be able to come to some of the events,
mm-hmm.
will they not?
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean,
yes.
Maybe a number of them together as a school, representing their school?
Right. On Tuesday, March the 10th, there's actually a concert at the Etheridge Center. It's a jazz concert for kids. And we are allowing students, K through 12 students, to attend free, and adults at a very nominal cost of $5 per adult, because we do consider this an outreach concert. We want to make it possible for as many kids to come. And the school district has been very generous and agreed to advertise this throughout the district and get as many schools involved as we can. So that's one of the concerts. And then a member of our board, Dee Crawford, is working with Angela Burkhalter and Rosie Berry on trying to find sponsors for kids to come to the other concerts. I know that the Friday night concert at the Washington Theater has an upstairs balcony seating area that can seat 38, and we're reserving that for students, and we won't sell those seats. We'll give those to particular students or that Dee has identified for us.
Okay. Thank you. Any other thoughts, comments? Well, again, we thank you for what you're doing for our students and for our citizens and our city. So thank you very much. You can stay now. You don't have to go.
We have to go to work.
Okay.
This is work.
Well, at this time, let's move into our city council meeting. That was the only item on our work session. And again, for those who just arrived shortly, thank you for being with us, and Happy New Year to you. And we look forward to your support again this year. Your last year was a really good year for the city and for all of us and citizens, and we look forward to another year like that. But we need everyone's help and support and comments and those kinds of things to make that happen. As we begin our city council meeting tonight, would you stand with us, if you will, and for our prayer and our pledge of allegiance?
Let us please bow our heads in prayer. Lord God, we bow our heads in thank you, in thanks to you. We thank you, dear Father, for leading us and helping us to get into 2009. A new year faced with challenges, a new year faced with good, with hope and prosperity for this city. We recognize that in 2008 we were faced with many challenges, but dear Father, somehow with this city you have protected us from so many, many things, that a lot of good things have come as a result of the volunteers that we've had, for good folks that are moving into this town, and for our staff and the leaders on City Council. We ask that we, as we plan for 2009, that you will guide our hearts and our thoughts. Give us, dear Father, the insight to know what is best for this town. Give us wisdom, dear Father. Help our city planners and our volunteers. Whatever comes to us, dear Father, we know that it is through you and your blessings alone. We're always careful in whatever we gain to give you the honor and the glory and the praise. We thank you, we thank you, we thank you. In your son's name we pray. Amen.
I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Are there any additions or deletions necessary to our agenda this evening? If not, do we have a motion and a second to approve the agenda? As
so moved, Mr. Mayor.
Second.
Okay, thank you. Show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay. Approved unanimously. All right, first item of the minutes, consideration of the minutes of the regular meeting of December 8th, 2008. Any comments on the minutes?
Mr. Mayor, if there are no comments, I'd like to move for approval of the minutes.
Okay. Do we have a second?
Second, yep. Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay. approved unanimously. Under two, old business is a second reading and public hearing of an ordinance to amend the zoning ordinance regarding accessory buildings in the HD and the RSS zones. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. I'm going to read this by the title. It's an ordinance amending the zoning ordinance regarding accessory buildings in the HD and RSS zones. This came before you in November. At that time, you asked that the Equine Committee look at this issue. And this is after Grant Larley came to the city of Aiken because there was an accessory building that they were trying to build for one of his clients. It went to BZA. BZA did not feel that it met the criteria that was necessary to allow a larger size building based on our current ordinance. Council heard the request, gave it over to the Planning Commission. The Planning Commission looked at it and felt that accessory buildings of a larger size may be appropriate in the HD and RSS areas, and that the design review board would be able to look at that and make a decision of its appropriateness as far as where and what type and size the building should be. But there was also some concern, so you asked the Equine Committee to also review this and to make some recommendations as to how they felt about it and what the design review board may need to take into account with this. We have come to a little bit of a crossroad because the Planning Commission has come up with a solution, which is to remove the restrictions that are currently in the zoning ordinance for accessory buildings for the areas in the horse district and the residential stable single-family areas. The Equine Committee, on the other hand, looked at it and said, no, we feel there's some value in it still remaining with the BZA and looking at accessory buildings based on the criteria that's already there. The Planning Commission, when they looked at it, got staff involved and actually did an inventory of every property out there and looked at the various sizes. And one of the things is, you know, one size does not fit all. You know, that there are an awful lot of different size properties in the HD, and it's very hard to have one set of rules and regulations that fits everything, which is one of the reasons why an appropriate body like the Design Review Board would be looking at it. But because there is a difference between the two groups, the Equine Committee and the Planning Commission, certainly we are here tonight for a public hearing on it, but Council may want to consider as another alternative besides either approving or disapproving this tonight, to consider tabling it and having the Equine Committee, not the entire committee, but maybe one person, two people. I know that their chairperson is Lucy Knowles. She's on the Design Review Board. Obviously very familiar with the equine community, and Bill Reynolds is another person. Maybe the two of them could sit down, or maybe they would appoint one or two individuals to sit down and talk through this to find out what are the differences and is there some way that we could come to a solution between the two bodies. But that's just another possible solution that Council may want to consider tonight as you move forward. Before you tonight, though, is the second reading and public hearing of an ordinance to amend the zoning ordinance regarding accessory buildings in the HD and RSS zone as per the attached Planning Commission recommendation.
Okay. Thank you, sir. This is the second reading and public hearing of this ordinance, and anyone who would like to speak on it may certainly do so. I do think it might be appropriate to have the Planning Commission view heard and then have the Equine view heard. And then anyone else that would like to speak, it's fine. So, Mr. Reynolds, would you like to speak first on behalf of the Planning Committee?
And then to the lady, being a gentleman that I am.
Oh, okay. I knew you would do that, Bill. So, just wanted to prove what a gentleman you were.
Lucy Knowles, 1141 Tunach Road, City of Aiken. I'd just like to say that I concur with Mr. LeDuc's suggestion that the Equine Committee and the Planning Commission get together and try to come out with a unified report to City Council, a unified recommendation, because this is a pretty complicated situation, particularly in the horse district. And so I think it would benefit by for review by both groups.
Okay. Lucy, would you recommend a couple of people from each group?
Let everybody from each committee who wants to attend and participate.
Okay. All right. Okay.
Mr. Mayor, I just have a question. Do you feel the current makeup of the equine committee adequately represents everybody that has horses in that area that will be affected by a change?
Well, when this committee was formed in 1999, we tried to get people who represented all of the disciplines, and I think we've successfully done that.
Okay, so you've got some small landowners as well, some of the smaller parcels?
Well, it's... we didn't look so much at the types of landowners, but you know, people from racing, polo, driving, hunting. So the idea is to get all of the disciplines involved, as opposed to the sizes of the parcels.
Should it include some pleasure people? Some people that just have horses for pleasure?
I think it probably does.
Does it? Okay.
And people who are pretty familiar with the equine industry in Aiken. But certainly anybody, I mean, I think you could have a meeting where small landowners would be able to come and express their opinion.
Yeah, that was my primary interest. Thank you.
This would be an open meeting, would it not, Lucy?
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
One thing that I would like to see is that we continue to have each project considered on its own merits, simply because it's such a neighborhood protection. It's an issue of neighborhood protection. And so that if something's going to be built next door to you and you have any size parcel, but particularly if it's small, it's really terribly important what setbacks are, where paddocks are, and all that sort of thing. And it's hard to make one rule, as you pointed out, that's going to affect, that's going to be good for everybody. But at least if it's a case-by-case situation, then at least the neighbors have a chance to comment. And I would not like to see that lost.
Okay. Thank you, Lucy.
Any other questions?
Any questions?
Thank you.
No, thank you for that. Bill?
And while Mr. Reynolds comes up, let me also mention that the original case that brought this whole situation about, that Grant Lairley came to us about, has been resolved. That particular accessory building is being built. The issues that were involved with it have been dealt with. And so that situation that caused this whole reconsideration of this has been dealt with to the satisfaction of all parties.
Good evening.
Sir.
Bill Reynolds, 1035 South Boundary Avenue. Since last July, when the City Council asked the Planning Commission to take a look at this ordinance and report back whether it should be eliminated in the Horse District and RSS, there has been approximately 80 to 90 man hours spent by the staff and the Planning Commission researching and discussing this subject, including not one, but two, three work sessions, not one, but two public hearings. We had kept people in the equine community that had expressed an interest in being kept abreast of what we were doing. They were copied, and a large number of them attended two work sessions in one of the public hearings and gave us some very, very good input and feedback. One of those discussions was we were wrestling with this 50% rule, and what became very clear was nobody knew what the right percentage was. And as a result of that, and we didn't even know what existed out there today, so we asked the planning staff to conduct this extensive survey lot by lot to determine what percent of each lot the footprint of the buildings on that lot took up. And that took 70 man hours to go out and to survey this, and it was very helpful because it gave us a look at just how crowded these horse district lots are. And what we learned was they're not. There was a concern before, without the facts, that there's overcrowding and there will be overcrowding and there's overbuilding. And what we learned was out of 176 lots, they averaged 91% open space. And you have that very impressive study. There's seven maps. Each property is identified. And it shows the footprint of the building, and it shows the percent of the square footage of that lot that's taken up by the building. The smallest lots that make up like 80% of all the lots, they had 90% open space. So in other words, 10% of the lot was taken up with buildings. That information was communicated to people that had an interest in the equine community. They attended a work session we had, at which time we concluded three facts that led us to recommend to council that this ordinance be eliminated in the Horse District and the RSS districts. Those three facts were, one, that the study that had been done indicated that there was plenty of open space and there was no crowding in the Horse District. Number two, since this ordinance was put into effect 3 years ago, there had only been two requests for variations. Two over 3 years. One was approved and one was turned down. But the most compelling fact that made us comfortable, and I should point out that two of the seven commissioners live in this area that's affected. Ed Giobbe is a very avid equestrian. He lives in the Horse District. Wilkins Bird lives in RSS. He's a noted historian on historic preservation and lives in the area surrounded by horse stables. And those two gentlemen are very keenly aware of protecting the quality of life in the Horse District. We concluded that the design review board had been in effect before any of these ordinances, and because they have total say-so over any structure, whether it's new, whether it's remodeled, whether it's a gazebo, whether it's a house, whether it's a wall, or whether it's a stable. The design review board and their final say in these areas had been a very effective way of maintaining the quality and not letting this area get overpopulated or overbuilt. Those three facts led us to recommend to you that the HD and RSS areas have the accessory building ordinance repealed. The rest of the city would continue to have it because that's an entirely different thing. So I guess, as I look back, I say to myself, what should we have done differently? It's been suggested that we meet with members of the equestrian committee. We thought that we had people from the equestrian community involved in this process because a number of them showed up, a number of them gave very helpful input, and when we had our public hearing in November, to my knowledge, no one stood up and protested. I wasn't there. I was out of town. But the minutes reflect that it was unanimously passed and no one protested. So my question is, what new information could be brought to bear? And secondly, what could we have done differently to have prevented spending all of this time, your time, the equestrian committee's time, planning staff's time, and still end up with having to possibly continue this?
Bill, from my point of view, I don't know what else you could have done. I think you've done a very thorough job, you and your committee. And I think it's bared out by the details. when Ms. Knowles suggested having one or two meet together, and I was saying to myself, well, if the Planning Commission wants to do that, then that makes it easy, fine. Okay, end of issue for the time, for this time anyway. But I've got a personal opinion on this, and I'm sure others have their personal opinion too. Since you don't feel, or you feel very strongly the way you feel, I think council ought to hear this all out. That's my view. We can take a vote on it if you want to. But I think we ought to go through the process here, because we've got one side saying, well, we can get together. We've got another side saying they've spent 80 to 90 man hours plus. And does anybody believe this isn't a thorough analysis? So that's where I stand. And so I'd like to hear council, what their opinions are of this issue. And as I say, I've got my own view on it, and I'll give it at any point in time. But what do others think at this point? I'd like to hear some other comments from council, or, and then we'll have comments from the others, anyone else that wants to speak as well, of course.
Why don't we do that first?
We can do that first. Okay. Bill, thank you very much.
Bill, before you leave here, the 50% of the heated gross floor area, you're saying that that was not resolved. Is that the only thing that wasn't resolved?
Well, the accessory building, we really focused on the 50%, mm-hmm. and then the more we talked about it, we said for a variety of reasons, that's not a good figure. That's not even a good way of looking at buildings in the horse district. Mm-hmm. So then we moved to, well, the total footprint of the lot. So we looked at everything. And then once we got the survey back, we said, this is going to be very difficult to try to set a percentage. Let's let the design review board decide on a case-by-case basis. They're the best qualified. Mm-hmm. And they've done a great job going back in time. And so let's just negate this ordinance in the Horse District and RSS District.
Okay. And you believe that design review board oversight protects, gives some of the protection that's required for these properties, that oversight of...
Mm-hmm. Far beyond anything that this ordinance only would kick in if someone wanted to increase, build a building that was greater than 50% of the heated space of the primary building and wanted it to be taller. If it's less than 50%, they don't have to get an exception, but they do have to go to the design review board. Mm-hmm. If somebody wanted to build a 2,000 square foot addition on a 2,000 square foot house, they don't have to go to the BZA, but they do have to go to the design review board. So they have to go to the design review board no matter what, because this is a historic district. Mm-hmm. And so this ordinance, you know, they talk about unintended consequences in today's financial markets. I think when we passed this ordinance in 2005, I think it had some unintended consequences for the horse district. In hindsight, we should have excluded the horse district from this ordinance, because we had the design review board protecting it because it's part of the historic preservation district.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, who would like to speak? Let's just start somewhere on this side, go around, come back. Anyone over here like to speak? Okay, would anyone like to speak? Anywhere? Okay.
Lucy in the back. Oh.
Grant Larley, 5180 Farmstead Drive. Sorry to bring up all this trouble, but as a contractor, it's been frustrating to, when you have to go to BZA and to design review for something that could be handled by one board, in my opinion, would be much better. And a lot of it has to do, as you start the construction phase or the planning of it, you come up to the city and find out what the rules are, and then there's an application process, and some of that can take, if you got to go to BZA, depending on when that meeting is, that may be 30 days you have to wait. Then you get that approval, then you go to design review. So that's 60 days. Now, if there's something that changes from when you get the BZA ruling, you go all back again. Where design review, if you're doing something to the building architecture that's not going to change that much, you can get it done administratively and not go through the meeting again. But as a contractor from before 2005, we had nothing in place, but the DRB handled this. So now we have to go, we came up with a 50%, and I understand where they got the 50% when they did that, but it doesn't fit all areas. And if you have a body that's going to take care of that, as the DRB would do, then I think it should be changed.
Didn't some of our problems come, though, because the design that was approved was not what was built or what was going to be built?
In 2005?
No, in this last issue that's now resolved?
No, not with me.
Everything that was approved was built exactly as it was approved?
That's a different...
What happened was the size of the hop... There was two constructions going to be taking place. One was the accessory building and one was the house. If the house would have been started first and built, then the accessory building would have been more size appropriate. But they wanted to start the two at the same time. Also, in reviewing it, and this all came about this last week when the owner made a visit to us and brought the issue up and was very kind in working with us and met with Mr. Evans and his staff for a lengthy period of time. And we looked at some of the overhang issues and some of the other issues that were involved and felt like the two could be worked on now because the house that Grant was working on was essentially completed. And which comes, when it came to the BZA early on, and I guess it was April, it was which comes first, the accessory building or the house? If you start the accessory building first, then it's too large in comparison to the house. Anyways, that whole issue got resolved with this particular issue. And although there's only been two since 2005, there's going to be others in the future. And again, we as a staff would just like to find a solution that would be easily administrated in working with the citizens that we have here and contractors like Grant and others to get the job done.
Yeah. Jane, I think you're thinking of another.
I know there are two issues.
The other two.
I just want to be sure that we're real clear, though, with everybody, that when you get something approved, then that's really what you got approved.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no artistic license to decide that it needs to be another story taller or another 500 square feet.
That's
the
other issue.
You're shooting the wrong fellow.
Yeah.
But essentially, had you done the house first, the existing ordinance would be fine. We wouldn't even be here talking about it.
Correct.
So the ordinance since 2005 would have worked for your issue had you built the house first.
Correct.
It was very close, and we had to take a look at the overhang.
Yes.
Was another issue with it, but again, that part was able to be worked out.
But being involved in both of the barns that have come before you for the variance, and I can see it happening in the future, is why I'm still here. I mean, I'd much rather be home with my children right now. But
oh, come on.
thank
you, Grant.
Going around, so.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else like to speak?
Thank you, Lucy.
Just a moment.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Pat Paternity, 217 Hemlock Drive, Aiken. I'm on the Board of Zoning Appeals, and although I'm not representing the board, you might as well get a BZA point of view on this. I apologize to Mr. Larley for all the frustration this has caused him and all the work this has caused council and the Planning Commission. But frankly, I think this has been a lot of ado about nothing. I don't think there's really a problem. It certainly hasn't been a problem in terms of frequency of cases. As has been stated, there's been two cases in the last 3.5 years. In one case, it involved a lot of slightly more than 2 acres adjoined by another lot of 2.5 acres for a combined 4.5 acres owned by an owner. The barn was limited by the size of a second building on the lot, and that was frankly approved. It was a slam dunk. It was a no-brainer. This particular case was not approved. I give you a little history about the petition's case. It was originally heard by the BZA in 2006. The applicant was going to put in about a 1,000-square-foot barn. He came to the BZA because the lot is undersized. And this is an important thing, where the plan says that the RSS lot should be 3 acres. Half of your lots in RSS are less than 1 acre. Lots of less than 1 acre do not have right to have horses in a stable by right. There are special exceptions. The petitioner then came before the BZA, and it was narrowly approved that the petitioner could have horses on the lot because the lot was undersized. The barn was not built. Mr. Arley came to the BZA last year. It was necessary for him to come to the BZA, not because of the size of his barn initially, but to get permission to have horses on the lot. He got permission narrowly. And I'll say narrowly because I was a swing vote. But he got permission to have horses on the lot with the condition that the stable be limited to 50% of the house size. We had no dispute with the design of the barn. It wasn't an issue of anything else. The barn was too big combined with the house on the lot to accommodate 2 horses. And frankly, that's another point I'd like to make is in the proposal, the fact that barns would go to the design review board for approval and ignore size. Let me tell you, if the lot is less than 1 acre, it still has to go to the BZA. If we're going to approve it, we'll look at the size of the barn they want to put up, where they want to put it, where the paddock is going to be relative to the property lines and the neighbors. And we'll approve it, if we approve it, conditionally upon a particular size barn, a location of barn, and the location of the paddocks. So it still won't avoid going to the BZA.
That's on lots that are 1 acre or less.
Less than 1 acre. Questions?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, thank you. Did a good job.
So you feel that it should just stay as is?
I think the Planning Commission proposal for larger lots that at least meet the 3-acre requirement, it has a great deal of merit.
To eliminate the 50%
limit. And, of course, those wouldn't require BZA approval.
Mm-hmm.
Unless they currently exceeded the 50% rule. If you want to eliminate that for larger lots, I think it's a good idea.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Pat.
Lucy Nels, 1141 Tunach Road, Aiken. And now I'd like to give for a moment the Design Review Board perspective. And that is that really design review does that, reviews design. And really it's a little questionable whether design review has authority to look at density. And that's one of the issues here is the density and whether having a structure larger than 50% of the main dwelling contributes too much density on a lot. And so design review has the ability to look at the design and make sure that it conforms with design review guidelines. But really, we don't have the ability to rule on the density. So I'm not sure that Design Review Board will solve some of the problems here. And so perhaps a BZA should join in this meeting if you all decide that the meeting is in order.
Now, Lucy, is that That's different from what the Planning Commission is saying.
That was what I understood from what Mr. Reynolds was saying, was that the Planning Commission's rationale for eliminating this requirement is that most of the lots are in the historic district and would require design review. So that addresses the design, but it doesn't address the density issue that I think that this particular ordinance is aimed at.
Okay. All right, let's hear from, thank you for that side. Anyone else to speak? Yes, sir.
I'm Alan Struthers, and I've been involved with Kendall Winters' project on 755 Two Notch. This is kind of new to us, so you'll have to forgive me if I don't use all of the right terminology tonight. But I've been involved with Kendall on the inception of her house and all that has gone on. And there's a lot of things that happened prior to her purchase of the property. And once she got into it, one of the statements that was made was that there was a 50% rule for that house on that property. When Grant Varley applied for the variance for it, that's true, but the house was scheduled to be on its existing footprint, but covered to a 3,000 square foot house. Therefore, Grant Varley came in front of the group again to get a variance on the barn for the 50% of the 3,000 square foot of the house. That at that time was turned down. But what I see is with this rule that we have, now these proposed rules that are in front of the council now, as I read them, there's been a tremendous amount of time spent on them, tremendous amount of thought. There's a lot of pitfalls to where you can change one rule and conflict with another one. It looks like those have been addressed tremendously. This allows the specific requirements of an equine area, and particularly in the historic district, to be addressed for that area. And the people that we dealt with the design review board, they showed us a handbook specifically what they were looking at. And everything that was addressed in here, and they call it density, but the actual use of a land, piece of land, whether it's an acre or 3 acres in this district, was well thought out by them. They have the rules. They have the interest of the historic district at heart. And to me, this proposed changes that you have now allow the DRB to really do the job that they're charged to do, and doesn't put more layers, more hearings on top of things that I feel are absolutely unnecessary and in some cases very conflicting when you come back with the decisions that we have to deal with. So I just wanted to share that.
Thank you, sir. Any comments? Okay. Thank you very much.
Mayor, I don't want to prolong this debate, but I would like to just clarify one point that may be weighing on your minds right now about the design review board and the scope of their authority. And I'm going to refer to some minutes from the September 9th Planning Commission meeting. I just reconfirmed what I'm about to read with Mr. Evans, but he said probably we ought to clarify this with Mr. Smith, because he would be the final voice on this. At that meeting, I asked Mr. Evans if scale was within the ordinance, and if the design review board says a building is out of scale, what would take preference? Mr. Evans said the DRB can say if something is out of scale or inappropriate and that it cannot be built. I then asked him if that was true, even if it conforms to the ordinance, and Mr. Evans said that in his opinion, the DRB can deny a request if it does not meet their criteria, even if it meets an ordinance or satisfies an ordinance. So, Mr. Smith, the DRB, we came out of that meeting with the understanding that the DRB can say whether it's a accessory building or an addition to a house or a gazebo,
it's too big, it's not in keeping with the neighborhood. Is that correct or not?
I would agree with you.
Okay, thank you.
I would.
So that means that they can get into issues of density on a lot.
I mean, the design review, when they see this request, is going to be looking at all of the surrounding properties and seeing does this particular new design comport with surrounding neighbors and that sort of thing. And density is certainly one of the things they can consider. Size of the building, all of that stuff is things that design review board can consider.
What do you think about this, Bill, about this business of making the relaxation of the 50% rule applicable to lots of 3 acres or more, and that when lots are small, perhaps there are variances that need to be... Well, it says that horses are not allowed by right. I mean, we've got one ordinance that says that if you have less than an acre, horses are not allowed by right.
That's right. 80% of the lots, though, are less than 3 acres.
I know.
So, okay. you know, if you're going to do that, you might as well go ahead and do it for the whole. It would get complicated, I think, if a lot is 2.9 acres or 3.1. The percentage thing, we really cooled off on that based on input from people that came to the meetings. They felt case by case is the right way to go about this because of the wide range and sizes of the lots, the structures, the uses, and so forth. And so that's why we completely backed off of a percentage.
Did you address the location of paddocks and that sort of thing? Because that's huge no matter what size lots you have. If you've got a paddock plunked next to your house, you're going to care.
That's something design review would do, I imagine.
Okay. Right.
But there's nothing in their guidelines that addresses locations of paddocks and things like that, is there?
I couldn't say. I'm just not.
I don't think there is. It just seems to me that some of that needs to be in there somewhere. And I don't much care whether the Planning Commission puts it in or whether the Design Review Committee has it in their guidelines or something. But... you know how much, it hasn't happened recently, but there have been a lot of, I remember several years ago, some people very upset about where paddocks were located.
I've got paddocks about 25 feet from my back door.
Right.
But I knew that when
But you knew it when you built your house.
Right.
That's right.
It wasn't. And it hasn't caused a problem so far. 3 years, but I knew it.
That's true.
Thank you. Thank you, Bill.
Hi, Jenny Stoker, 331 Kershaw Street. I did go to several of the meetings that the Planning Commission had. I tried to, you know, rattle the drums and get enough people there to get interested in this issue. And frankly, not a lot of people came to the meetings, and I don't believe that anybody from the Equine Committee was at those meetings. I think that now that you know that it's down to the wire, you've got people interested, and there's nothing wrong with slowing down and getting some more people's input. I know Planning Commission did a lot, and the surveys that they've done are, you know, very helpful to look at and to see the percentages. And yes, there's only been two things recently, but they've been very recently, and with the way that this area is growing, there are going to be more issues coming up and more buildings, and I think we need to make sure that we get it right the first time. I think density might not have been an issue, but it could be an issue, and density on a very small lot is what is my concern. When you get a very small lot that applies for a horse and then, you know, overbuilds to the point that the horse can't live there, that to me, that's too dense, and I don't know what the answer is, but I think that now that we've got people interested, we should slow down and get some more input and see. It may be that it's, you know, that we need to eliminate the 50% and come up with something else, but I think we need to decide what that something else is in further meetings. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Jenny. Anyone else like to speak? If not, it's back to City Council for consideration.
Yeah, Mr. Mayor, I didn't, after Mr. Reynolds spoke, I sort of felt it's not a win-win thing. We're not either going to either support the Planning Commission or the Design Review Board or the Board of Zoning Appeals. I mean, I think it's an issue that very clearly demands further meetings with the Planning Commission, the Board of Zoning Appeals, the Design Review Board. Keep in mind, we're here because of one issue, and it's frustrating to try to change what the entire city does because of one issue. What we have has worked satisfactorily. I tend to want to put great faith in the Equine Committee. They clearly recommended that we leave things as they are, but Lucy has indicated maybe we could profit with further discussion. So my sense is we ought to table it, have those discussions, and make sure whatever we do has the support of all the parties involved.
Well, I think certainly we could do that. However, I've got faith in what our Planning Commission has done. As Mr. Reynolds indicated, they've got two members that live in the area that have horses or are familiar with horses. I know a situation that involves my family, my father, down off of Newbury Street years ago, that if you look at that right now, it was a small house in the back. You can't even see it from the road hardly. It's an 8-stall barn and with a second floor. And I don't know the exact square footage of that house, but I would say that the barn is much bigger than the house in square footage. And, of course, that would never have been built. But yet, that's right within 30 seconds of the woods. And it would be a shame, I think, to have had that barn had to be built, you know, with much less space, because it afforded not only my family, I had riders in my sisters were good riders, I was away at school, so I didn't ride too much, but it would be a shame now, because it's still there and it's still used, and it's an 8-stall barn. I don't know how many horses they have now. But I think it does not make sense to hold the larger lots to hostage over a 50%, as you would the single family 1-acre lots. I think since we've heard that the design review has purview over scale, I think I have faith in the design review board. So certainly the easiest thing for us to do would be, let's table it and get the group together again in 2, 3, 4 months. We'd be back here talking about it. But I think enough work has been done. I didn't really hear anything, and maybe Lucy can tell us what their thoughts were. I just heard Lucy say that it'd be nice to get together perhaps one or two from each board and talk about it. But I didn't hear any real definitive reasons, maybe I missed them, as to why the equine community felt the way they did. And again, maybe I missed it, and if I did, I apologize. But again, to me, I support going ahead and approving this based on the recommendations of our Planning Commission, which has spent an enormous amount of time, and they've had public hearings. They've talked to members of the horse community, and so I really don't see any reason to continue this item any further. I think we've got enough facts, in my opinion, that's my opinion, to move ahead with this issue. Comments?
Mr. Mayor, I agree with you. I have total confidence in our Planning Commission and their recommendation to us and our staff that spent many hours working on this and researching this issue. I was very pleased to hear tonight that the DRB has purview over these properties, and so it's not opening a floodgate. We don't have to concern ourselves with the properties that are less than 1 acre, because by law they cannot have horses unless they go before the BZA. So I, too, would like to go forward with this tonight.
Let me ask for a clarification. With the house lots under the 1 acre, this gets rid of the 50% completely, does it not?
Yeah, 1 acre. Yeah.
Well, completely.
Well,
I mean,
you've got to get
less than 1 acre.
For 1 acre, you'd have to get
permission to have the horse.
But the 50%.
50-50, yeah.
The 50% rule would not apply to any property that wants an accessory building if we approve what the Planning Commission has approved.
That is correct.
That's correct. So the 50% number would be gone.
Right.
Okay.
Not all over the city, but only in the horse district and in RSA.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Was the Equine Committee invited by the Planning Commission to participate when all this was going on?
I have no idea. And vice versa, was the Planning Commission invited to meet with the Equine Committee? I mean, it goes back both ways.
Well, the Equine Committee doesn't meet regularly. They have to be, as I understand it, Roger, correct me if I'm wrong.
We asked them. That's exactly right. It's a call group that was formed, 10 so years ago to get involved when there were horse issues.
Mm-hmm.
And so they haven't been called upon very often, thankfully.
And I guess my only reservation is what could it hurt? I mean, obviously they differ right now, and I'm not sure this is an issue that even differ over if they ever really got down to it. So what could it hurt to let them talk?
Any other comments?
I was going to say that I thought I understood that one of the speakers indicated that during the discussion with the Planning Commission that she had tried to get some of the members of the equine community to attend the meetings, and that that didn't happen satisfactorily. So I'm wondering if there is enough of a conflict of opinions here to put this off any further. Unless there's someone out there who can say definitely that they feel that we absolutely need more time to discuss this, I would be in favor of going on, especially with the design and review board having a say in density, because I was concerned about the...
I sure didn't know. I was on that review board for a long time, and I just don't remember anything about density in that ordinance, not at all. But that would be that you could go to and say, this is a reason that I can't approve this, other than I just don't like the way it looks. I mean, I don't think anybody on that committee really likes to make decisions on that basis unless they have to. They like it to be more...
But if it looks too large, or if it doesn't fit with what else is in the neighborhood, they do have the right to say, you know, we can't approve it because of the way it looks. And looks could be, it's too dense.
Well, so. my opinion, and some of the things that Bill Reynolds said, and then when he mentioned that there were two people that live in the district, and I know one of them, Ed, particularly, that if there was something out of place, we would hear from Ed. He'd be sitting out there right now. Given that statement, in addition to the number of hours, we have to understand that there are people that really care about the equine industry. And no one would do anything that... I know that would do damage, especially some of the names that I'm throwing out, because of the value that the equine industry brings to this town. A lot of time has been placed in this effort. A lot of people that care about this have invested their time and effort. When Bill gave the information regarding the open space and no crowding, the small lots, and the number of the amount of open space, and I think you said 90% is open space on that small, on the small lots, and large lots is 85%. In 3 years, I think, Pat, you mentioned that we had two cases in 3 years. Is this a crisis for stopping this? It's individualized consideration that we have to give to this request, these requests. We can't have a cookie cutter, saying one size fit all, but rather looking at individual requests as it comes to us. The DRB, as you've mentioned, Don, and their oversight has the protection there to help those folks through this process. Given all of those things, it leads me to believe that are we going to have a perfect ordinance? No. But it does allow us to have something in place to move forward with this afternoon.
Any other comments?
Let me say first, I think Bill did a wonderful job of explaining the problem as the Planning Commission saw. I understand fully where they stand. I thought Pat also did a good job from the BZA point of view, especially on the small lots. Jane makes a point. I'm not convinced that the Design Review Board really has a solid basis for just saying no to anything. And therefore, I would say, fine, if we wish, let's go ahead and do this, but with the understanding that we will review, look at the design and review guidelines and fix it if it needs to be fixed. That's what I would say we need to do.
Okay. If it needs to be fixed, we ought to fix it. But we've got a planning manager, and we've got our attorney, at least those two right now, saying that it does fit, but we can always check. We can, you know, all of our ordinances are subject to change, you know, for good reason, obviously. We all know that.
Yeah.
So we could certainly look at it at any time again.
Which is why this is before you now.
Okay. Yes. I'd like to make the motion that we approve this on second reading.
Mr. Mayor, I second that.
And all in favor, show of hands, please. Okay. Opposed? Okay. Passes 5-2. Very good. Thank you. Thank all of you who spoke and all of you who listened and didn't speak. Thank you. Item 2, second reading public hearing of an ordinance regarding abandoned vehicles. Mr. LaDuke, please.
Yes, sir. I'll again read this by title only. It's an ordinance amending Chapter 42 of the City Code of Aiken, South Carolina, regarding abandoned vehicles and other issues. The city is looking at a way to deal with cars that we would consider abandoned or junk cars in lots. This happens in more of your lower economic areas where cars are left there for a long period of time. They become a nuisance, and we get numerous complaints over the years. We have come up with a program that we suggested to you last November. There were some questions by one of the wrecking companies that picks up cars. I believe that they may have gotten confused in a manner that they may not have as much business in picking up cars if the city got involved in collecting these cars. These cars that are dealing with this ordinance would be in individual lots. The city would go ahead and identify a car, just like we had with the Demo 200 program for buildings that were in disrepair. If we found a car that was in disrepair, was not running, couldn't be fixed, we would offer to buy that car for $75, get the vehicle, take it to a junkyard. Now, when we first started looking at this, the prices were coming in anywhere from $300 to $600 for scrap metal. Well, the market's changed tremendously in the last 3 or 4 months. They're not getting $300 to $600. 3 or 6 months from now, it may change again. But we still think it's a good program in getting rid of the cars. It's been very successful in the city that we looked at. And we are recommending to you that you would consider approving this on second reading, and which is a second reading is a public hearing tonight, to amend Chapter 42 of the City Code regarding abandoned vehicles.
Okay, thank you, sir. This is the second reading of public hearing of this ordinance. If anyone would like to speak on this ordinance, you certainly may do so. If not, it's back to City Council for consideration.
Mr. Mayor, I move that we approve this amendment and agreed.
I second that, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. All right. Any comments? Discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay. Pass it. Did you put your hand up?
I'm supporting it, but with some reluctance to hear, but I'm supporting it.
Okay. All right. Passes unanimously. Item 3, second reading, public hearing of ordinance to close the unopened portion of Coker Springs between Newberry Street and Lawrence Street. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. I'll read this again by title only. It's an ordinance authorizing the City of Aiken to continue with closure of an unopened portion of the right-of-way of Coker Springs Avenue between Newberry Street and Lawrence Street, at the same time retaining its public utilities, public safety, and related municipal maintenance authorities' continued utilization of it for city needs. If you look at paper plats, some have indicated there is a street that goes from Newberry to Lawrence, extenuation of Coker Springs. It's been gated off ever since I've been here in Aiken for 25 years, and I'm sure for decades before that. So it has not been an open street for public use. What this ordinance, if you approve this tonight, will do, will say that we are giving up any rights that we may have had, even though we don't feel we had any rights there to begin with, on the street. There has been a lawsuit that has been going on, and this will go ahead and basically resolve it so that we will not be part of that lawsuit because we have no interest in it other than continuation of utilities in that area. Currently, there's a large stormwater pipe that goes through there. That's the only utility we have right now, but we do want to keep an interest as far as utilities. Otherwise, we are recommending to City Council that you approve this ordinance, which is a second reading public hearing, to close the unopened portion of Coker Springs between Newberry Street and Lawrence Street to any public motor vehicle traffic.
Thank you, sir. This is second reading public hearing of this ordinance. If anyone would like to speak on it, you may do so. If not, it's back to the council for consideration.
Move for approval of this ordinance to close the unopened portion of Coker Springs between Newberry and Lawrence Street.
Second. Okay, we have a second. Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Item 4, Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial Highway designation. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, you have a memo from our city attorney concerning this. At the previous meeting in December, City Council approved a resolution designating a memorial of a highway going along Route 19 from our city limits through town and then on Whiskey Road, which is also South Carolina 19, to where the sign was at the mall, which indicates that this is the Brinkley Memorial Highway. Shortly that or after, there was an article in the paper concerning the fact that we had designated that area. We received a call from Jimmy Brinkley. We then received a call from the state and the highway department questioning whether or not we realized that this was also named at the Brinkley Highway, not at the mall, but going all the way back into town. I've heard from different sources that that goes all the way up to South Boundary. Other sources say Richland Avenue. When I contacted the highway department myself, they indicated it was from Richland Avenue south to New Wellington. At the same time, we asked the design review board to look at the placement of a monument at the intersection of Hampton Avenue and Lawrence. They approved that monument, so a monument can be placed honoring Dr. Martin Luther King at the southern point of Hampton and Lawrence, or where the parkway ends on Lawrence Street at that location. So that's not a question. There doesn't believe to be a question on signage going down 19 into town on Lawrence Street. But because there was some question on the Whiskey Road, I felt it needed to come back to City Council so you would have that information to determine what, if anything, you would like to do with the resolution that you passed previously, designating it all the way down to the mall, since we would then have a dual designation of one highway.
I have a question, Roger. Why stop at Park Avenue if you're coming down Lawrence. Why don't you go all the way down to where South Boundary starts?
You could certainly do that.
And that would really be the end. I mean, that's leaving a whole another block that could be also part of the MLK Parkway or Memorial.
It could be done that way. You had indicated before just going all the way down to Park Avenue, and so that's...
Well, I guess I never did. But anyway, I think we did without saying.
What did you just say about the Highway Department said that it extended from Richland to the city limits?
Again, when a call was made to the local office here asking what information they have concerning this, they said it's not just Whiskey Road, but extends up Whiskey Road or Chesterfield Street to Richland Avenue, or to the center town. The other information that Gary had gotten from the Highway Department was it started at the city limits of the city and extends southward. The difficult thing is for the last 4 weeks, Gary, we've been asking for some documentation. Show us, the resolution, the legislation that was approved, and no one could come up with that legislation or those documentations from it. So I'm not too sure if we'll get any documentation other than what they're telling us.
And I would promise you, if we were looking for a designation that the city had made, Sarah would be able to find that document. She would know where it is. So it was a little disturbing at the Department of Transportation that they couldn't show you the resolution or the whatever it was that was passed a number of years ago that said, we think so highly of Mr. Brinkley that we're naming this highway after him, but they can't show us where the documentation is. And so we are operating a little bit of a cloud, and that's why I backed up just a little bit in my memo and said, let's go from the north side of Park Avenue out Highway 19. That's why I made that suggestion. Once you get across Park Avenue and go down the hill and then come back up South Boundary,
I wouldn't say come back up. Okay. I mean, this is totally up to the committee whether they want to take that extra block and include that in.
There are people to speak to this evening. I don't, and while they're coming, I don't think that anyone would have, would want to do anything that would usurp what was intended for Mr. Brinkley, number one.
Brenda?
Secondly, it is of the, I've heard that this started from South Boundary, south. So there are all kinds of feel as to where this begins and should end, but certainly there has to be a compromise with this. And based on my conversation, the folks that I've spoken with do not want to do anything that would again usurp what has been intended for Mr. Brinkley. I do want to and say this publicly. We have got Mr. Winfield here who needs to be applauded for bringing this to our attention because he was the one that said, hey, we've got to do something. We thank you publicly, Mr. Winfield, for what you've done in terms of bringing this to our attention, which is why we're here right now. And
let me add just a little bit more before you speak, Brendan, if it's okay. Back maybe 4 or 5 years ago, and maybe a little longer than that, a sign appeared.
Yes.
Proclaiming Whiskey Road, Brinkley Highway. Mm-hmm. That sign was placed at the corner of South Boundary and Whiskey Road.
That's correct.
It did not come into town.
Right.
It started there. Mm-hmm. And I guess someone who remembers more clearly than I will tell you that there was a problem with the sign being there. First of all, it kept coming down. And so they moved it out Whiskey Road past the mall. The sign was never in town, never on Park Avenue, never on Chesterfield Street. It was only ever at the corner of Whiskey and South Boundary.
And it was
from the memorial information indicates that that was the beginning of the outside part of the city of Aiken.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And Richard Johnson was the one that brought it, made that make me aware of that as well in terms of his recall of that information.
Well, I don't think anyone questions that now, do they?
Right. I don't know. I don't know where this is coming from with Richland, but I'm sure the archives in the state ought to be able to pull up that if they so desire.
That sign was moved because it was people thought it was not appropriate for the district.
Really?
Yeah.
That's what it was.
It's right at that intersection, and it's
it was a rather large sign.
It's a large sign
and a small corner sign.
Yes, ma'am.
Brendalyn Jenkins, 804 Dillon Avenue, Northwest Aiken. Mr. Mayor and Council, thank you so much for this opportunity. Upon our last meeting, I just want to let it be known that we've kind of been silent on this because I don't presume to speak for the community, and I wanted to make sure that I'd spoken not only with Reverend Smalls, but Mr. Winfield, as Councilwoman Price said, picked this issue back up. And certainly after the article was printed in the paper about what the designation was of the Brinkley Highway, certainly we want to be sensitive to that family and the Brinkley family having that designation for their family member is as important and as vital to them as it is to anyone else of having another designation. So we certainly would not in any way seek to dishonor them, but certainly in our conversations, none of us were sure where those designations were, and we talked about from out back by the mall back up. But certainly if it is founded that is at South Boundary and Whiskey Road, we would acquiesce to that finding. If the mayor says if we want to take it down to meet that, we're okay with that. I think that more than anything else, that once that is found out that the community and Mr. Winfield could not attend the design review board because he was recuperating from pneumonia last week, but his mantra is, let's get a sign. And so certainly when we were here before, even your vote no was not against the designation, but against what we're discussing now, ugly, unsightly signs. You know, but our community doesn't care if you put it on laminated brown piece of paper, just put a sign up. That's where we are at this point. And certainly Representative Clyburn is championing whatever resolution needs to come from the state and the county council would do those. So we want to applaud the city council for your diligence in this, and wherever the designation lands, if it's South Boundary and Whiskey Road, so be it. If it's Park and Lawrence, so be it. But I think at this point that the community wants to see some sign of a sign, and certainly the Design and Review Board approved the marker that will be installed, unveiled rather, and dedicated on this Saturday, the 17th, at 1 o'clock. So publicly, I want to invite the mayor and the council to be in attendance at that in the middle of Lawrence and Hampton, and so we'll call public safety to get that blocked off. I'm thinking as I'm standing here that we need to. So I'm hoping this speech I'm covering all the bases. So that's where we are on this issue, and I hope that there's a meeting of minds and we can move forward and in good faith and understanding.
Thank you, Brenda.
Mr. Winfield?
Thank you, Brenda.
I got to take directions. We're okay?
I'm fine.
Good enough. Thank you.
Mr. Mayor, I would like to mention, just as a matter of record, that Jimmy Brinkley had contacted me as late as last week and said that he did have documentation that Brinkley Memorial Highway started south of Richland Avenue. Now, I have not seen that, and neither, you know, I don't know if he's going to be able to produce that or what, but he did contact me and in a discussion say that, and I just...
But that designation doesn't go to, it doesn't take South Boundary up Lawrence Street to Park Avenue and then to Richland Avenue. It continues straight up Whiskey Road to Chesterfield Street.
To Richland.
So, I mean, yes. And that's not part of the designation for the Martin Luther King Jr. Highway.
Okay.
Yeah, that's right. This would not.
It's a different.
It's not a conflict.
Right. It's a different road.
Correct.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Any other thoughts? Should we leave it open to either or, Park Avenue or going down the hill to South Boundary, whichever the committee decides they want to do in our consideration of this?
Should we not leave it open and maybe clarify exactly what we're going to do here?
Sure, if we know.
It doesn't conflict with the Brinkley designation. If it goes up Chesterfield and we're coming up Lawrence, we can go all the way to South Boundary and stop where that one picks up.
Absolutely.
And that clarifies everything. And
absolutely.
No one's
correct.
Confused about where it
right.
stops and where it ends.
Correct. Okay. Do we have a motion?
I would like to move comes up Lawrence Street, goes all the way to where South Boundary starts.
Okay. Well, it starts at the North City Limits point.
Right.
And comes down Lawrence all the way down.
You're actually
South Boundary.
The motion will actually be you're amending the resolution.
Okay.
Just to change the southern terminus of the Memorial Highway to be the intersection of Highway 19 with South Boundary.
Actually, Lawrence Street, because 19.
Lawrence Street with South Boundary, excuse me.
That is correct.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I'll accept that.
Could I make a suggestion? When we were looking at the southern terminus to be more out in an open area, where the speed limit was probably 35, 45 miles an hour, a larger sign might be more appropriate. But when you get into the downtown area, especially at South Boundary and Lawrence, where you can't go probably more than 5 or 10 miles an hour to make that turn, a 2 foot by 7 foot sign may not be appropriate size.
It's not.
And
it's too big.
I would like to suggest that we work with the highway department to put a sized appropriate sign, you know, certainly large enough that people can see, but something that would be more appropriate in size for that corner that people would be able to see, but yet not be obtrusive.
That's what I want you to do. I want you to make the sign appropriate for the for the area that we are putting the sign
now
in.
As we come into town on 19, that is probably 45 miles an hour, and you could have a larger size there, and it would be appropriate for the area. Mm-hmm. So if council doesn't mind, we could certainly look at those two ends, but if you'd give us some latitude to get the appropriate size sign, that'd be appreciated.
Mm-hmm. And we could go ahead with the one on the north side that's a standard highway sign, and we won't have to have a piece of brown paper. And that's the way it is on the south side as well. It's, mm-hmm. The designation is at the edge of the city, and it's that kind of a sign. And I don't have a problem. Just when you get downtown, I want it to look better.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't think anyone would have any objections to that. And Mr. Winfield and Brenlin and the group won't have to stand and hold that paper bag in their hand when people come to town.
And if we get it to where it's not even green, like we get, if they would allow us to do a nice brown designation or something that would look historic and appropriate in that area. Again, that's all I'm asking is some latitude.
Let's just review it with the committee, though, once we get the design before the sign's made to make sure that we're all in agreement.
Absolutely.
I second.
Okay, we have a second. Any other thoughts, comments?
I don't know that we had a motion. I just want to echo a point that Roger made. When this thing first came up, I was thinking we thought about the memorial signs as your highway memorial signs that are all over the country. As you drive by, you see them in names of military people and civilian people and so forth. And the sign that's going to end up on Lawrence, I mean, is it going to say highway? Because, it's an interesting point. You're going 20, 25 miles an hour if you're going at all. And the word highway is just kind of seems inappropriate
parkway.
At that area. I don't know if maybe we could think of another wording or something.
How about parkway?
Yeah.
Let us work with the committee.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, we've got a motion and a second. Any other thoughts?
What are we moving for? I'm sorry.
Where the road ends.
Going down to South Boundary.
So we're just, the motion is just to
modify the resolution.
Modify the resolution.
All right.
To do that. Okay, show of hands, please, all in favor. It passes unanimously. Okay. Under new business, first reading of an ordinance to annex property at Caldwell Court at East Pine Log Road.
Yes, sir. You have a lot of information here, and I'll read the ordinance. It says an ordinance to annex to the corporate limits of the city of Aiken certain property consisting of 0.94 acres of land, more or less, owned by Richard and Margaret Hammond, and to zone the same general business GB. This piece of property was unanimously approved by the Planning Commission with the following condition: that there be no access from East Pine Log Road, and that the existing curb cut be closed, that the site layout be shown in the documents presented by the applicant to the Planning Commission meeting, with any changes to be approved by the planning director, that a traffic study not be required if a restricted covenant permanently limiting the total number of new vehicle trips by all uses on the site to no more than 2,000 per day is recorded at the RMC office, that the exterior facade of the principal building be as shown in the documents presented by the applicant to the Planning Commission hearing, that the applicant and the owner sign an agreement with the city listing any conditions, that the agreement be recorded at the RMC office, and that all conditions would be met within 180 days. This is the first reading of an ordinance to annex property at 2 Caldwell Court under the general business zone.
Okay, do we have a motion and a second?
So moved, Mr. Mayor.
Second, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Is anyone in the audience that wants to speak on this issue? You may do so if you'd like to. No, ma'am. I think this is
for an auto parts.
Auto parts. Right. Okay. All right. One quick question. Well, maybe I forgot how we do this, but how do you limit the number of trips to 2,000?
You beat me.
it's recorded in the covenants. If sometime in the future they want to put a convenience store there, which we know will have five, again, you. Trip generation is based on the square footage of a certain type of building, according to the Institute of Traffic Engineering. If they change their mind and said, well, we're not going to put an auto parts store here now that it's zoned GB, we're going to put a convenience store up, and that has 5,000 trips per day, we'd have to say no because it's limited to 2,000 trips.
Okay, that's
an estimated amount.
We won't make the auto parts man chase his customers away.
Nobody sit out there and count the cars now.
You're number 2001.
You're the 2000th car. We can't.
You can't
anybody
come
else in the parking lot.
But the concern I think that we've had is that 2000 limit in the record somewhere where the Planning Commission will know when and if it ever comes up again?
Again, once it's zoned as a GB, more than likely never go before the Planning Commission again, unless they're asking for some variance, would just go to planning staff. And the only concern we have is keeping up with these records over a period of time. But again, being recorded at the RMC office, the deeds would come
forward. It's on the deed.
It'll be on the deed saying that it's limited to 2,000 trips per day. For anybody in the future that would be buying that property, to put in some type of store on that property.
But should we have some sort of a searchable file that indicates every one of these approvals that we've given, that Planning Commission can immediately just run a check at that lot?
Ed, you want to answer that? Maybe Ed already has it already set up. Got a smile on his face, he must.
We have a written logbook, for one thing, that sits on a shelf that we refer to. But in addition to that, all these are in the city's searchable computer program or computerized record system by tax parcel, so we can call up a tax parcel and look at all the records that relate to that tax parcel, and we'll see that there is that limitation.
With the GIS system we have for mapping now, GIS is a geographical information system. It's basically taking a base map of all the lots ran, and you put layers on top of that, and one of these layers has information related to that tax parcel number. And hopefully everything that we need will come up when we ask for that information on the tax parcel number. But the best guarantee, which is why it's in the ordinance here, is that it's recorded at the RMC office so that whoever buys the property in the future, they will know, and then, you know, hopefully it's a check and balance against one another.
Okay. All right.
Mr. Mayor, not of great interest in this issue, but if the second page in our packet clearly shows that the stop sign and the street sign are somewhat disjointed and probably yeah. need a little repair.
Right.
You can see where that stop sign is.
Mm-hmm. All right. Did we have a motion and a second on this? I got so excited about it, I didn't keep track. Okay. All right. Are there any other comments? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Item 2 is first reading of an ordinance to revise the concept plan for the property on Silver Bluff Road across from Center South Shopping Center. Mr. LeDuc.
Yes, sir. I'm going to read this by its title only. It's an ordinance approving the concept plan for property owned by University Health Services Incorporated and located on the east side of Silver Bluff Road. This is a piece of property that the City Council approved for a mixed-use development a few years ago. The mixed-use development, at the time, it was a trailer park. Brad Brody came in and asked for annexation of that property based on the conceptual plan that he had that basically showed retail on the first floor with second story residential and some mixed-use office buildings. The concept has changed in the fact that he sold this property to University Hospital out of Augusta, Georgia, and they would like to go ahead and create a medical center here with three primary buildings. The first phase would consist of a one-story building of 17,000 square feet, which is fairly close to Silver Bluff Road. In looking at all this, the traffic changes are not significant. And the Planning Commission, after the review, they unanimously approved this at their December meeting with the following conditions. That the development comply with the submitted concept plan, building elevations, and narrative. That minor changes to the building and site be approved by the Planning Commission, the Planning Director. That the provisions of the access management ordinance be waived to allow the location of the proposed drive. And that's to give some flexibility because of a tree that's there. That the planning director be given flexibility in approving changes to the concept plan that would result in the preservation of an additional grand and that would result in the preservation of additional grand and significant trees. That the planning director be given authority to allow a pedestrian and or vehicular connection to the subdivision to the south. That there be a note added to the concept plan that the project will comply with the planned commercial provisions of 8.3.8, which includes the lighting provisions. That there be only one monument sign with the base of the brick of the same type and color used on the building facade. And the planning director approved the size, location, design, the freestanding sign, the design and size of the wall sign. The owner execute an agreement listing the conditions, and the agreement be recorded at the RMC office within 90 days of approval. This is first reading, and a public hearing would come in the next meeting, if council so desires, upon consideration of this ordinance change.
Let me ask a quick question on item 5 there. Planning director be given authority to allow a pedestrian and or a vehicular connection. Why wouldn't we just want a vehicular connection? Those are so important, rather than having to get out on the highway, take a quick turn, and get to whatever is next door to you. And I think we've proven that on Whiskey Road, where we've just got that new cut through. It's not even in service really yet between the Hobby Lobby and Lowe's, and that, of course, the new food store that's going in there. And
we'd prefer to see a vehicular access to it, but since it's a established subdivision next to it, that may not be possible. But maybe we could get them to allow a pedestrian pathway through it for the residents that are in there.
Okay. Well, let's talk about it when we start talking about it.
Is the subdivision that's south of it in the city?
Yes.
What about the property in back of it?
Behind it, it should be in the city, yes. They have no problem allowing a stub out to go to that location. It's just getting the adjoining property owner to say, yes, we will allow a connector street to go through.
Yeah. Okay, well, I'd like to pursue that with you to see what your thoughts are on it when you But go ahead and make your presentation, please.
Mr. Mayor, if I may.
Introduce yourself, if you will.
If I may, Ms. Claiborne left the room. She serves on the board of directors for Aiken Regional Medical Centers and was concerned of the appearance of a conflict, whether there actually is one or not. Yeah. And so she is choosing to opt out of these discussions. So put that on the record, and she'll file her papers with the clerk.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Thank you. Yes, sir.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. My name is Tom Dennitz, project executive with Erdman Company, 3100 Northwoods Place, Suite F, Norcross, Georgia. I appreciate the opportunity to present to City Council this evening. We have just a very brief PowerPoint presentation illustrating.
Tom, excuse me a minute.
Please.
We're missing. Okay, we've got four of us. Y'all over there. Okay. I thought all of a sudden it was just Leslie and I here.
They got the good seat.
And Leslie looked like she was getting ready to move. Okay,
no,
go ahead.
I'm good.
Go ahead, Tom.
Thank you. We wanted to make just a brief presentation for you this evening illustrating the concept plan that we're bringing forward and highlighting a few of the revisions to this plan in contrast to the previously approved plan by the previous landowner. Up on the screen, you'll see our master plan for the property. It is an approximately 7.5 acre piece of land, highlighted there by the red boundary. As mentioned in the reading of the proposed ordinance, we do anticipate a first phase building of approximately 17,000 square feet, and then two future buildings that would be approximately 27,500 square feet in size, depending on the market demand for those, for a total square footage on the parcel of 72,000 feet. That size would respect the city ordinance for parking requirements as well as open space ratios. The first phase building you'll see at the front of the property, and then the two future buildings deeper within the property. There were several design objectives. Again, we tried to take from the previously approved plan some of the attractive qualities of that. First of all, starting by visually screening the parking with our three buildings, putting those more at the periphery of the site and trying to tuck and hide that parking, servicing those buildings to the interior. Being that this property was previously a residential area, I believe a trailer park and some permanent homes, there are a number of grand trees of high quality on the property, and we're looking to save all the significant and grand trees possible in our design. That actually drove the location of our entrance towards the north end of the property in order to save a very significant live oak tree at the frontage down on the south side of the property. You'll see it just below our first phase building there. Another feature that is a little bit different than the previously approved plan, we've actually taken the storm detention areas highlighted there in the green and broken those into smaller segments so those can be built in phases along with the actual building and parking lot with it. Again, it hopefully creates a more attractive appearance to the property and also limits the disturbance needed in the initial phases of construction. We tried to choose an architectural style for these buildings that was in keeping with its residential neighbors. We looked to an architectural scale and a style very traditional in nature, utilizing a brick skin, utilizing an architectural shingle on the mansard roof, and also trying to break both the elevations and the roof line in a number of places to give the buildings interest. You'll notice this is the first phase building elevations. It's anticipated to be a one-story structure, the top elevation being the interior side that patients would enter through, the bottom elevation being the side that fronts Silver Bluff Road. So both of those elevations have been treated in an architectural manner that gives them a high degree of interest. Our future phase buildings, because of the topography as you get further into the site, And because of the area that the site would afford in terms of square footage, we do believe some two-story buildings may be possible on those future phase buildings. So again, we use the same architectural style, just adapting that for a two-story structure. Our client conducted an updated traffic study to analyze the effects that this proposed development would have. That was done by SRS Engineering, who also did the previous study on this site. Basically found that because of the lower intensity of this use, that a northbound decel lane into the property was no longer a requirement based on SCDOT standards, and that a three-lane entrance to the property, meaning a dedicated lane in, a left and right turn out of the property, should be maintained. All those have been respected in our site design. Happy to answer any questions you may have for us.
How many buildings, Tom? How many buildings?
I anticipated to be three buildings at its ultimate build out.
Oh, okay, just three buildings. Okay, okay. And how, what's the staff like in numbers? Your staff, your doctors, nurses, technicians, whatever?
It will certainly vary based on the practices that ultimately go in there.
Okay.
We are anticipating a parking ratio that meets your zoning ordinance, though, in terms of the parking count.
Okay.
Because if you're doing 72,000 square feet, if an office is 3,000 square feet, which is huge, you're going to have 24 offices, right? 3,000 into 72,000 is 24. I'm just wondering about this too. This is a lot of, it's a lot of cars. My question is, what happens on the back side of the property? How that drops down? How does it do? What will it be like on the back side for these neighbors that have homes surrounding this property? In other words, when you've got that detention pond on the very four detention ponds on the back side of that property, you know, is it going to be raised up? Is it, you know what I'm saying? Is it going to,
sure.
What's going to happen?
The city ordinance does require between a commercial project such as this and residential properties abutting a 25-foot undisturbed buffer. So there should be a high degree of visual privacy, first of all, between those residential properties and this development. Because of the early nature of where we are in the design process, we have not done detailed civil engineering at this point. Generally speaking, those detention ponds, they would have to have a berm around one side in order to create the volume needed to hold stormwater runoff. But again, those are generally well landscaped on the periphery.
I just wonder what it's going to look like if you've got one of those houses that backs up to this. Is it going to loom large all over you, or is it going to be?
I believe the natural topography of that, the site kind of goes downhill in all directions. So those folks that have houses in the adjoining lots will probably be down below our development, and with the natural landscape screening that's already there, my sense is they're not going to see much of anything.
And the detention pond will be on their level, or will it be like the one near Woodside where it rises up real high?
Again, the actual grading based on the topography has not been done. What I'm saying is I think there'll need to be a berm. If it's a downhill slope, there would need to be a berm built up on the perimeter of that to create the volume needed for that stormwater pond to function.
How long is the property on Silver Bluff Road? How many feet? Do you know?
The particular copy of the survey I can't read that. It is several hundred feet of frontage, but we'd have to get back and verify that number.
I just have the reason I asked for that is that we were talking about waiving the access management ordinance, which we do too frequently, in my opinion. But when I look at this, it's a problem, but I can't think of a solution. And perhaps, Ed, you could help us out, but I don't see how you could build that project and stay within, 200 feet of the property line and 100 feet within this and so forth. I I certainly don't have an objection waiving the access management ordinance, but it sort of highlights that maybe the access management ordinance isn't appropriate unless a property has so many feet on the periphery, on the street side. I'd appreciate your comments.
You know, Dick, it looks like to me, looking at the scale, that it's maybe close to about 300 feet. Look at that scale there that's on the
well,
picture.
But they need a waiver. Where is it?
It may not even be 300 feet.
I don't think it is. Did you understand what my concern was?
I think so. The Director of Public Works and Engineering can waive any part of the access management ordinance that he considers to be impractical.
Okay.
And so where you don't have enough frontage to end up with the 200-foot distance from those side property lines, I mean, he can waive that. But in this case, I mean, I think we were assuming that we would ignore one side, you know, one property line, but we were concerned about the northern property line and what the distance should be from that property line.
What do you feel about eliminating that decel lane? I mean, if this is going to be successful, there are going to be a lot of cars going in and out of here. And that is a busy part of Silver Bluff Road right now.
All I can do is go with the traffic study, which says it's not needed. I'm not qualified to refute that.
Well, the traffic study did highlight that it was going to make it more difficult just by virtue of putting any increased traffic on Silver Bluff would make it more difficult to take to go left from Town Creek onto Silver Bluff. But apparently Town Creek, while it's level E or D, is not a significant enough problem to warrant a traffic signal.
I think the study showed that today Town Creek eastbound is a C, and it would go to an E even if this project were not built. This project, again, according to the study, would instead of an E, would take it to an F. But it would be an E even if the project is not built.
But if the project's built, it goes to an F.
Where are you talking about, Ed, when you say go E
on
F?
Town Creek Road, yeah. At Silver Bluff.
Coming into
eastbound.
Silver Bluff?
Eastbound, correct. On approaching Silver Bluff Road, it's a C today.
Okay.
And it'll go to an E even if this is not built.
Why? Why do you think it's
background,
going to go to an E?
Background traffic increase. I mean, just more people.
Because of this project?
No. If this project is not built, it's going to be an E just from additional people living further out Silver Bluff Road or Town Creek Road or whatever. Just the background normal increase in traffic that's going to happen every
Okay,
year.
Now you're talking on Silver Bluff Road at Town Creek?
Well, we're talking specifically about the eastbound. Where Town Creek meets Silver Bluff Road.
Okay, eastbound at that intersection.
Right.
How many years from now?
The study was based on 2015.
Okay.
Becoming an E.
Okay.
Is that based on the existing roadway and intersections or improved?
Existing.
Existing. Oh. Well, we've got some plans on improvement there. Hopefully that's going to help that situation.
One more question, Ed, on the access control ordinance here. I was looking for the three items. You've got to have 100 feet between a new driveway and a side property line. A new driveway must be 200 feet from any other driveway, and a new driveway must align with a curb cut across the street or be offset by at least 150 feet. I just can't see how you could... I mean, you have no choice but the waivers. And maybe at another time you can kind of educate me on whether or not we need changes in the access management ordinance, because this does not seem to be an unusual property size. I mean, it seems reasonable from the street side, but there's no way they could ever build it if they had to comply with all elements of the access management ordinance. So.
Well, now, has that been studied? Tom, have you all looked at that?
Yeah, I think the first criteria there precludes us based on the frontage we have. The discussion that we did have with staff was weighing the benefits of the access management versus preservation of the trees and fronting the building on Silver Bluff Road. The direction that we got was that preserving the trees and the frontage on Silver Bluff Road probably trumpeted the access management provisions. We understand the lot to the north of us does not have access on Silver Bluff Road. King Edward Way, I believe, is the road to the north, and that's the next access point to our north that would create concern. We're not looking at alignment with anything across the road, curb cuts, because Silver Bluff is a five-lane section there, and you do have a center turn lane that folks turning southbound out of our property, you know, could utilize that turn lane as a safety point for making a leftbound turn.
All right. How do you feel about the deceleration lane? You don't want it?
No. Again, we're defaulting to the traffic engineer's recommendation too, and basically what he's saying is that, you know, we don't have the traffic volume to warrant it per the DOT requirements.
I'm frankly concerned about okaying all this future planning stuff. I can see your phase one and how we can approve that. And you said you didn't want to have to do, I mean, you haven't done, and I can understand why, any detailed things we can look at about what the back of the property is going to look like, what the side of the property is going to look like. But if we approve this, are we approving whatever they're going to do in the future?
It's a concept plan, is my understanding, so yes.
So, yeah, we are.
If you approve this on second reading, the three buildings, as long as they stay to that basic size and according to the drawings that they've given us, and the layout stays relatively the same, then yes, you are approving the whole
project.
I
just would really like to see some kind of elevation or something about what the back of this property and the side of this property is going to look like in relation to these neighborhoods. We've been burned a couple of times on excavations that have occurred near neighborhoods or adjacent to other neighborhoods, and I just want to be sure that what this is going to be, what it's going to look like. Also, are we going to notify all these adjacent property owners, Roger, that this is a public hearing the next time? Don't we have a, how do we do that?
Well, Jane, we had several of the neighbors that were here for the first reading and had expressed concerns, you know, as far as, of course, from what I could gather from what these gentlemen were saying is, you know, the way that their backyard property is now, it's like they look at just a cliff, you know, that's dirt. Or, I mean, that was the way I understood them to be saying that, you know, you look out of my backyard and you just see this wall of dirt, which is the way that it is now. I mean, I can't see how this property could improve their view. I mean, I don't see how there's something that we can hold this group to that's going to improve the view of their property. I mean, if they're looking at that, just that wall, I mean, they would have to landscape their property, but up on that, the tuft up there is where this project would be built, if I'm understanding correctly. And then you would see have a berm or a 25-foot undisturbed buffer around it, and then contained inside would be this development.
I just would feel so much better if we approved this, if we had even a curse of some kind of general drawing of what you're anticipating. And I do still want to see these properties. They will be notified.
They will all be notified.
Good.
Okay.
Individually.
Yeah,
right.
We send a letter out to all adjoining owners on an ordinance change like this.
But I just think that's what I'd ask if I were an owner. You know, this is what I've got now. What's it going to look like? Because if they don't have anything, if we don't say anything about it now, we don't have anything to say about it.
Well, this is first reading of this ordinance, and Tom, you could bring something at the second reading and public hearing, possibly?
Well, hopefully we'll have some citizens here if they're concerned about it, because each one will get a letter, as Roger's mentioned, telling them about this second reading.
Well, I'm concerned enough to ask that if I couldn't see some kind of a, that's just my opinion, of a drawing of what this is going to look like in relationship to the surrounding neighborhoods. Because we're here, we've had a policy of really watching out for neighborhoods when we can, and we've tried, And sometimes we've been real successful and sometimes we haven't.
Okay, are you talking about a drawing that would show the elevations, Jane?
I think they have some idea, yeah.
Homes over here, little cliff here, buildings, that kind of thing?
Yeah, how much they think they're going to have to...
Side view of...
How much you think you're going to have to dig out in order to build this kind of a structure? How is, you know, is it going to loom four stories above the... I don't know. I want to see what it's going to be like.
Is there... Even if you look at a topo map, you get some feeling as to the elevation changes in that area. You have the plan drawing right now. Council's not looking for rendering, artist drawing of this, but if you could give some kind of profile cutting through there to show the grade differential between the adjoining property and this property.
Or you could approve the request as is before council tonight, and add an additional condition that they will bring the building designs to council before a building permit is issued.
They do have building designs here.
Okay.
Well, we have one for the first building, right? We have them for all three?
All three.
You have a rendering of our first phase building, and then you have a concept rendering of a two-story version of that, which would be anticipated for those two future buildings.
The other two buildings will be two stories then?
Potentially, yes.
Will they be... Okay. So are you anticipating the parking lot as being fairly level, or is it going to go downhill, or how do you anticipate this to going?
For a medical facility, we generally limit the slope in a parking area to no more than a 5% grade, which is a fairly steep lot to begin with, so to the flat in relative terms, yes.
And the tenants will all be individual physicians or medical specialties of some type? I think you're going to have a lab and what have you?
Yes, we're marketing to private physician groups, and there would be obviously ancillary services, lab imaging functions that would support those practices.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Do we have a motion and a second? For first reading? I move that we approve this on first reading.
Can we add that clause about seeing some kind of rendering of what the...
Sure.
I could vote for it with that.
Okay.
Are you talking about a rendering or a profile?
Tell me what I need to ask.
I think you really want a profile, what it looks like. A rendering, you have a rendering of what the building looks like.
Right.
You really like to see.
If I've got a lot adjoining that property, am I going to look at 50 feet of construction or 20 feet of construction? What am I going to look at?
So that's the main area in the back, so to speak, or wherever the houses are.
Yeah. If we're going to,
looking up there from the houses, looking up to the
development.
New development.
Right.
Is that okay, Tom? You understand that?
Right.
And again, there's all kinds of different areas. It's facing River Bluff on the south and east side, and on the north and northeast side, it's facing the Keeneland area, more Keene.
I mean, really, it could be a picture, could it not? It could be a camera photograph.
I want to see it.
In various places.
That may be an option. I think our difficulty is that to really give you what I think you're looking for, kind of a sightline study, if you will, is that our topography information beyond our property boundary is very limited.
We would have some of that.
Okay.
And this is what I was having this...
Yeah, Larry Morris, who's standing up over there in the corner, could go ahead and get you the topography maps for the other subdivisions that are there that are fairly accurate in elevation that you could then overlay your area.
I
think some photographs would be very good from their backyards, looking back towards where you're at.
I'm just wondering what criteria that it will be evaluated on.
Well, I think the criteria that it would be evaluated on was whether it was going to improve the view from their backyard as opposed to making it unbearable for them.
What are the aesthetics going to look like in relationship to those areas?
We certainly can't require you to go down and make that cliff that they're looking at now look better, but we certainly don't want you to add anything up top that's going to make it worse than it already is. I think one thing would be great if we could somehow get to where we could take a look at one of those backyards and see kind of what it looks like.
Again, maybe some photographs with it would be good.
Might I suggest that the city take that on, as we wouldn't be entering private property?
Right. We'll let our public works engineer tell us.
Do you have to go in the backyard? Why can't you take some? I mean, I haven't driven down the road, so I'd have to do that. But take them from the road.
Can you see that? What I understood Don describing is there's just bare wall or dirt in the back, and the cliff is quite high based on where this property is being developed. But I don't know because I haven't seen the.
If I may, Ms. Price, my apologies for interrupting. If council will turn your packet to this particular wall
here.
This drawing was made by Ossington Brand. It's a local engineering firm. We will certainly get a larger copy of that and look at it. Mr. Dennis has told me these are 1 foot contours. So if you look at the, this is Silver Bluff Road at the top here. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And this is the rear of the property. This is River Bluff where my home is. And this is King Edward Way.
Point in that direction, so.
Okay, I'm sorry. This is Silver Bluff Road. This is River Bluff. This is King Edward Way right here. And if you look, these are 1 foot contours. So from this back property corner, Ms. Waters, it looks like to approximately the middle of the property there is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, maybe 8 feet of rise in the property. The 5% Mr. Dennis quoted on a parking area would be 5 feet of rise in 100 feet. So the property is steeper than that, it would appear. Without seeing the larger sheet, I'm unsure of that. But that's something we would work with them on trying to do that. One thing that did encourage me that he was showing is that they have shown the detention areas to be low impact areas. And what that means is that they will have to do some work on that detention to try to get some of that water to percolate into the ground. They'll have to have plantings in it, things like this, so it won't just be a dry hole in the ground.
And how large will those loom above the houses, the detention ponds?
Those right there would actually be at this ground surface here.
Oh, really?
They would have to be, the detention areas would be. And if you look specifically in this corner where King Edward Way is, right here, there is an additional 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 feet of rise across that lot from King Edward Way up to where this property is. So that's approximately the elevation difference is around 6 feet. I stand around 5'8", so I would not be able to see even the top of that ground if I was looking at it from King Edward Way. The way that their water would have to be discharged, even with a low-impact development area, which would be like a wetlands, much like the wetlands area, they will have to put some piping in through easements that we have across side property lines and discharge those into the subdivision areas that are adjacent to them. That's something they'll have to work out with those property owners. Once that's in, they'll have to replace
Well, how many feet is that big? Is the building, the two-story building, then, that's in front of the two detention ponds at the back of the property? That two-story building's at least 20 feet, probably more than that, right?
The two-story building is going to be about 25 feet tall.
Probably about 27 feet. Yeah.
27 feet. So, and again, I'm going to orient it this way. We're talking about this building right here?
Yep.
I would presume that's going to be within about 75 feet of the property line. And again, I'm guessing because this is not really to scale for us. But if you look at the area that is going to be undisturbed buffer It looks to be a little less than half of that to the corner of the building, so between 50 and 75 feet to the property line.
That's 75 feet, really?
Between 50 and 75. I'm guessing, as far as without having that large drawing to scale, it could easily be 50. This is not a scale drawing.
There is a graphic scale here.
And it's an uphill measurement, right?
It would be an uphill measurement. This is the area that the ground is rising by 6 feet in that area. We have available the topographical maps from the other subdivisions. We will be glad to make available so that he can bring, so Mr. Dennis can bring something back to council along that. I just wanted to point out that we do already have a topo on that lot in your package. So we just need what's there beside the on the other two subdivisions.
Larry, I know you've got a couple of detention ponds right down there, fairly close to where the, well, it's close to where the houses are. But still, how much runoff do you think they're going to get, maybe in their backyards?
We would eliminate that. I would not allow them to run off anything into their backyards. If they did, we would not allow them to open the building.
They would have to pipe.
They would have to pipe it. If you look where it says Renhack and Smith, there's a property line going straight to that one detention pond. We have 5-foot side lot line easements on all the properties there in River Bluff. We would require them to use those. Again, they would have to repair any damage they did to the lots or anything when they were putting that pipe in. They may even have to bore that pipe if there's some obstructions in the way. But any discharge from their stormwater would have to go into that pipe. Again, with low impact, we would want to see some of that discharge actually going into the ground and not coming out.
One of the reasons, too, for breaking that pond up into smaller structures, the previously approved plan had one stormwater pond, which meant the depth of that and the corresponding berm needed to create that volume would have been quite large. Our plan changed that in breaking that pond down into very small ponds and limiting that impact to our neighbors.
Okay. More questions? We had a motion and no second.
I'll second, Mr. Mayor.
All right. Any other discussion? All in favor, show of hands, please. Okay, passes unanimously. And we're moving on to second reading. Okay, thank you, gentlemen, very much for your presentation. Item 3, approval of a resolution for deed of dedication at Kemper Downs.
Yes, sir. Last June, you accepted the deed of dedication for utility of roads in Kemper Downs subdivision. We do have a detention pond out there and a lift station that needs to have deed of dedication. This is that subdivision that gets brought up often as one that we do not like. And maybe that's why the developer sold out everything and has disappeared. Anyways, the person who has purchased it wanted to state that they have no interest in that pond, and this is a quick claim deed that we would then be able to get the dedication of the pond and the lift station so that we could maintain it properly and allow the residents in that area that are living there to not have to worry about any failure of the system that's currently there. So for your consideration tonight, this is approval of the attached resolution accepting a quitclaim deed of dedication from Pine Log Investments, LLC, for the sewer pump station, detention facilities, and all related easements to these facilities in the Kemper Downs subdivision.
Raj, do we know that these are in good condition?
Public Works has reviewed them, and they are recommending their acceptance.
Okay.
They're only a few years old, and
yeah.
We don't see any problems with it. But right now, there really is no owner, per se,
right
out there. And this will allow us to have ownership of it.
What does it cost us to accept something like this?
Zero.
Okay, do we have a motion to second?
Mr. Mayor, I'll move approval of the resolution for deed of dedication at Kemper Downs.
Okay.
Second.
Okay. Any other discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Item 4, approval of resolution accepting deed of dedication for sewer utilities in Section 1A of the village at Woodside. Mr. LeDuc.
Yes, sir. This is an off-site sewer going to the village. It's our first real test case. If you recall, we passed an ordinance asking for a two-year letter of credit with the idea that DHEC wrote us a letter saying that before the water and sewer system goes into operation, we need to accept those immediately if we're going to go ahead and allow any business or properties to be sold. This sewer, we see no problems with it. We do have a two-year letter of credit that we received in August of 2008, which expires in 2010, in compliance with our new policy. So we are asking City Council tonight to approve the resolution authorizing the acceptance of a deed of dedication of the sewer utilities and sewer utility easements, not the water or the roads or anything else at this point in time. It's just the sewer for Section 1A of the village at Woodside.
Thank you, sir. Do we have a motion and second?
So moved.
Second, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Any discussion? And if not, show hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Item 5, approval of a resolution accepting the deed of dedication for Kingsport development. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yeah, this is a very unusual situation. Kingsport was developed decades ago, and for whatever reason, there's two 15-foot lots that were created out there, and they're on the tax sale list. And so we talked to the owner of the property, Lionel Smith. He doesn't want them. Talked to the neighbors. They don't want it. And so
the neighbors don't.
They're willing. I would have thought the neighbors would accept it. They say no, because then we have to pay taxes on it. So anyways, he is willing to deed to the city of Aiken these two 15-foot strips, which we don't see a lot of value, but we do see the possibility that future utility easements may need to be run along these two properties that are currently outside the city. So we are recommending to City Council the consideration to approve the deed of dedication from Lionel Smith concerning his donation of lot 3416 and 3428 on King Sports Way. Now, the resolution you have, I talked to our attorney who drew it up, not Gary Smith. This was Ben Moore. And Sarah gave you a new copy tonight. And the change in the new copy is the fact that this other one was listing the value of the property. Well, if there's a deed of dedication, if he's going to get a tax consideration, we're not in the taxing business, and therefore that's been taken out. That's up to him and his tax attorney as to what the value of this property is, and I didn't want that in the resolution. So that's why the new resolution leaves out that amount. So your approval tonight would be based on this new resolution that you have before you, but everything else is still the same.
Okay, thank you, sir. Do we have a motion and second?
Move for approval, Mr. Mayor, of the resolution deed of dedication to Kingsport.
Okay.
Second, Mr. Mayor.
We have a second. Any discussion?
Yes. This seems to me like almost a piece of land that nobody wants, and I'm not sure why the city should take it. I can't imagine it has any use. The 3428 parcel is being used by either the occupant in 3432 or 3424. I mean, it's being maintained. The 3416 portion, I think, is all wooded. But I don't see how this benefits the city taking this land. So
the only benefit it has is right now it's on the tax sale list. The owner doesn't want it. He's willing to let it continue on the tax sale list. So there's going to be more money advertising and having to send letters and. We're just trying to avoid all that. Eventually, it's going to wind up in the city's hands if nobody wants to buy it. And I don't believe anybody's going to buy
it. Why would it arrive in city hands? I mean, if somebody can't sell property, the city doesn't have to buy it.
Still be here. Well, we're not going to buy it, but
green space.
It's on the tax sale. So eventually, it comes part of the city.
I see what you're saying.
It'd be like a house that's got abandoned and nobody wants to buy that house.
winds up a tax sale, and after X number of years, the city winds up with it.
Can I tell if it's green space bonded too?
Well, and, you know, that's what we would keep it as, green space right now. If somebody wants to maintain that green space, we don't really care.
We don't have to maintain it?
No. Our intention would leave it as is, as it's been for the last 20 years. Except, as you said, somebody is... That's, we thought it would be, why doesn't the person next door want to buy it, but they don't?
Well, the one doesn't have to. It's getting the use of it for free.
As long as they don't put any houses on it or sheds or other things.
Not enough room.
It's a very unusual situation.
Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm. Where's Larry? Is he still here? Larry.
What is the chance that we might need that for some type of utility easement or use or whatever?
And again, the property behind here is not in the city. It's some fairly large acreage back there that at some time in the future could be developed. And that's, we don't know what it's going to be used for in the future.
Right.
I think Mr. LeDuc said it very succinctly right there. We really don't know what's going to come onto that property next door. This would give us an easement to put a water line in or a sewer line or something like that. Certainly it's not wide enough for a driveway. If there was something that was adjacent, that such as the medical complex that council just discussed, a 15-foot wide property for the city would be a perfect walkway between the two properties. Other than that, there's just not a lot of use for it.
Okay. So there's a possibility, but we don't know.
Possibility, but we don't really know.
Okay. Well, we have a motion and a second. Any other discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All approval of this to accept it. I'm the only one?
No.
Okay. Oppose. It's easy to find out one. Okay, so it passes 6-1. Okay. Golly, I was scared there for a moment.
They all raised their hands while you weren't looking.
Okay. I know it. Item 6, approval of accommodations tax committee recommendations. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. Last spring, every spring we have applications submitted to the ATAX committee. They review it and come back to you with a recommendation, generally in around March, April time frame. We did that this year. Since that time, we had one other request come to us, which council reviewed, I think it was back in August. We do have some leftover money, and we have had two requests for this. One request was from the Aiken Trials. The other request was from the Aiken Polo Club. The ATAX committee decided not to fund the Aiken Polo Club magazine, but they felt that the request to market the Aiken Trials met with their criteria, what they would like to see, which is advertisements and out-of-city publications, cable outside the city area that would bring people to Aiken. The concern they had with the magazine, that they felt it was more for local area, and that the advertising that they have in that magazine should be able to pay for the magazine itself. So there was a long debate. I know we have some gentlemen out here representing the Polo Club. I know we have some people here representing the Aiken Trials. We do have $15,700 that we feel is available, and then we're right now accepting applications for this next year. So for your consideration tonight is a recommendation from the KTEX committee to fund the Aiken Trials for marketing at $15,700.
Okay, is anyone from the committee that would like to speak? Glenn, is anyone would like to speak from the committee itself? Oh, sure. We'll let anybody want to speak. Anybody can speak. Okay, Alan. Yes, sir, please. And just introduce yourself there so we can get you on tape, and your address, if you would, please.
My name is Alan Corey, and I represent the Aiken Polo Club. And last spring, the ATAS committee awarded us some money. And we were delighted to be able to have that money. But they said, as was mentioned by Roger, that they didn't want us to spend any money on the POLA program, which for the last 4 years has been a success. And we sent it out to all members of the POLA Association. We sent it out to people also in Europe and different people like that. We also advertise in various magazines, but this year they said, we don't really think we want you to do that, and the POLA program should stand on its own merits. And so we didn't agree, but we went along with it, and then I had a call from Lisa Hall, and she said, we have surplus monies. Do you think you can put them to use in advertising, meeting the criteria of the ATAX laws? And we said, well, we would try, but we would like you to. We would still like to go back, since these monies are a great deal more than we originally were granted. Would you take another look at funding some of the program? Because it really is the heart of our whole advertising campaign and all the content that would go into any advertising in other magazines or any other venues. It would come out of that content. So talking to a member of the ATAS committee, it was suggested that Pam Gleason, who is the editor of the Aiken Horse and also the editor of the program and helps us with all our advertising, we try to sit down and have a meeting. Well, to make a long story short, this didn't happen. We ran into the holidays, and then there were some family issues, and Pam couldn't make it. And so I contacted this member of the ATAS committee, And in contacting her, I found out that there was going to be, this is Friday, I found out that there was going to be this meeting today, and once the council had decided, everything was pretty much written in stone. So we're not asking for any different amount of money. We can still put this money to work, but we were asking to sit down with the ATAS committee to relook at the program and relook at certain aspects of how the money is to be spent, and this is basically to benefit the city of Aiken. And we've always met all the criteria that's necessary, and we would like to have a chance to sit down with this ATAX committee, and we're not asking for any more money than they've already allocated. All we're asking to do is sit down and let's come up with a real plan so that we spend the money for the Polo Club and for Aiken and use it to its best advantage.
Okay.
Thank you.
Alan, questions? I'm confused. The Aiken Polo Club, as I understand it from Roger's letter to us, was not funded.
That is not correct, to the best of my knowledge.
The committee unanimously passed motion not to fund. Oh, the magazine. Excuse me.
It's just the magazine
for the Aiken Polo.
It's just
Club.
The magazine.
Okay. Now, what you're asking, I think, is money appropriated for the magazine.
Within the amount of, they came back to us in October and gave us more money because it was not used by somebody else, and they said, can you make this work? And
okay,
we want you to do a video, and we want you to do this, and we want you to do more outside of Aiken, but we still don't want to fund the Polo program. And so what we're asking is to we've just discovered that with the Polo program we can put it on the website and digitize it, and there are a whole bunch of new tech things that I wasn't aware of, and the content of the magazine and the content of all of these ads, somebody has to put them together, somebody has to write the article, somebody has to do that, and they have to be paid. And that's kind of, I mean, that's kind of where we're coming
so,
from.
So you're saying that the, I'm still confused, by the way.
That's okay.
You're saying that the Polo Club itself is not funded? Is that what you're saying?
The Polo, the ATAC's committee funded the magazine, funded the Polo Club to spend ATAC's monies last spring. They then came back to us, I believe it was the end of September, first of October, and said, do you think you can put these monies to good use in the same manner that that we agreed to do in March, April, or whatever the time frame was. So by the time we got this request, we're already into October, and the and our fall season is almost over. So it, so we've made a plan for starting in another 2 weeks to advertise the program outside of the 50. Not the program. I'm getting confused. But advertise what a wonderful place Aiken is to come to, and so on and so forth.
Yeah. Another question. Okay.
Certainly.
I want to get basic with me on this thing. What are you asking for, and how much money is left in the kitty, and what are you asking
for? I'm not asking for any of this money.
You're not?
No, I'm not asking for any of this money.
What are you asking for, please?
I am asking for, within the money that's, that they allocated, that the committee came back and said, through Lisa Hall, that she came back and said, can you put this to work? And I said yes, we will do our best. I am asking within this amount of money to relook at helping us fund the program. With only a small percentage of the money that they have.
Why can't you do within the scope of what you've got what you need to do? Glenn, explain. Is there some barriers in there whereby they can't use some of they can't use some of this money for certain things? Is that the problem?
The way the applications are submitted, Allen's group submits an itemized application. Our committee goes through that and they approve four or five of his items. They did not approve the magazine. They felt like at the time that it in itself was not a draw.
Okay,
keeping in mind how this money's derived from folks staying in hotel rooms.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I understand.
I know that Lisa and Cam have spoken, and I think Lisa has a better understanding than we do now of how this magazine is distributed and how it's used. What my suggestion would be with the Polo Club is that Mr. Corley come back to the committee and explain to the committee a little bit better about how this magazine is actually used, he's already been given the money. It's just he wants to use it to pay for the magazine. And I think if he comes back and explains to the committee what the use of that magazine is, they'll be fine with that. Is that not right?
That's correct. So we just
okay. What are you looking for from us then tonight?
Nothing.
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 Approval of Bernadette's for the trials, and then we would go back to the committee, meet with him, and come back to you again with the committee saying, gotcha, we do approve his magazine.
All right.
They've already been approved for $25,000. Council's already approved them for $25,000 for this year. If the committee says you could use it in a different manner, they're still going to stay within the $25,000. It doesn't need to come back to City Council.
That's correct.
All you're approving is the overall amount they're going to be given. Internally, ATAX just needs to say, instead of him with the cable and newspapers and everything else, it can now be used for the magazine.
Correct.
Okay, so you've got it then within the ATAX committee.
On this one, yes.
Okay. So, all right. I understand.
And just for council's information, in 2005-06 was the first year that Aiken Polo Club went to the ATAX committee, to my knowledge, and they received $12,000. The next year they received around $41,000, and this year they received $25,000. Mm-hmm. But again, when they come, they may list 10 items and they approve 8 of them, and they might strike out 2 of the line items because they don't feel it fits the criteria they want. What I understand the Aiken Polo Club wants is reinsert that one line item that you disapproved before in the magazine, allow us to use this money, which you've already allocated.
Okay. And it does meet the law.
It meets the law, just to
the committee didn't feel it was appropriate.
Good, okay.
They were micromanaging.
Well, thanks for the bearing with me and the understanding. Okay. So then what's before us now is approval or disapproval, I guess, of this next item with the Aiken Trials. Is that right? That item?
That is correct. All we're asking for tonight is that the trials would have $15,700 additional money that they could use for advertising.
Okay. Do we have a motion and second?
So moved, Mr. Mayor.
Second.
We have a second. Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? All right. Passes unanimously. Item 7, approval of the jewelry box for 2009. Mr. LeDuc.
Yes, sir. Every year you have to approve the jewelry box. We take items in Department A, put them in B once they've been selected. And so we have 19,588 registered voters that we'll be having a chance to pull from. You may have read an article in the paper recently that there is some discussion because the Division of Motor Vehicles is supposed to be coming up with a listing of everybody within the cities that they could draw from. The problem is, until we get something for the Division of Motor Vehicles, we need to keep having trials, and we need a listing to pull from. Once the Division of Motor Vehicles comes along and gives us something, we could then come back to you with some additional names, hopefully. But their biggest problem is, take my street for example, just because Williams Drive is in the city, my neighbor to the right and left across the street from you are outside the city. So it's hard to say who's in the city, who's not in the city without a lot of work. That's what I see is happening with the Division of Motor Vehicles. So for you tonight, we're just having you approve our jury box for 2009 so we get started on the jury trials.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Do we have a motion and a second?
So moved, Mr. Mayor, that we approve the jury box for 2009.
Okay. I'll second it. Any discussion? Question?
You have to come up here, please.
It's a simple question. I just want to know, is it a new jury box every year?
It's yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. That's
right.
That's
simple.
Right. And we check to make sure your name's in it.
Okay. No. We put it in three times.
Okay. All in favor, show of hands. Passes unanimously. Okay. Under petitions request, item 1, approval of the water service for convenience store SC19 and Shiloh Heights Road. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. Most of you have probably had an opportunity to look at this convenience store. It is essentially ready to open. They have asked for temporary water. We granted that to them with the proviso that, depending on what happens tonight, may need to be disconnected because it was for temporary purposes only. This is a 3,700 square foot convenience store. We did talk to them about the fact that all of our entrance roadways, we are looking at a certain type of design look for all new buildings. It is a brick building that is out there. Their signage, their landscaping, most everything fits in very well with what we're looking at. There are a few exceptions, though, that the Planning Commission, when they unanimously approved this, asked for, and I believe the developer would like to go ahead and discuss with City Council. The conditions were as follows, that an executed agreement on the provisions of city service listing conditions be recorded within 60 days. The city engineer approved the water system. Project comply with the city landscaping and tree preservation. There were no trees out there when they started. The zoning ordinance, including approval of landscaping plan to the extent deemed practical by the planning director. Project complies with city regulation for the general business zone. That a waiver be granted from the access management provision of the zoning ordinance to allow the curb cut on South Carolina 19 to be 40 feet from the northern property line and to allow the curb cut on South Carolina 19 and the easements easternmost one on Shiloh Heights to be 40 feet. Exterior of the building be a brick, and that's already been taken care of. That all the wiring be buried, that's fine. That the development to provide traffic mitigation as provided by South Carolina DOT. Conditions be met before they open the business and the best and right provision of the zoning ordinance apply. If you read through the report here, there's some conflicting things as to what is needed because the turn lane, as you're going southbound on 19, and there's a left turn lane for Shiloh Heights Road, conflict with the station there. That's going to have to be worked out with the Department of Transportation as to what they would allow and not allow. And so that is why in the condition that you see under item number 8 says that the development provide traffic mitigation as provided by the South Carolina Department of Transportation. Because, again, the traffic engineering report says to do it one way. They don't think they could do it that way. They feel there's going to be some possibly not be allowed, or some changes may be required by SCDOT. And so that is why it was approved, stating that whatever the highway department requires is what they need to provide as far as traffic mitigation. So we don't get involved in the middle. Let the highway department, since this is a state highway, tell and dictate to them what provisions they need to follow as far as turn lanes and the extension of turn lanes and anything else that they may need out there. And then they will have to abide by it. So this is before you tonight. I know the developer is out there that could answer any questions you may have concerning this, concerning providing them water utility for convenience store on Route 19 at Shiloh Heights Road.
How about this waiver number 5, Roger? Could you explain the pros and cons of that? Are there any?
Ed, maybe you might be best to explain that. Again, this gets back to what Mr. Duar said, that it seems like every time we get to the access management, there's always the exceptions. And it's probably something we do need to revisit. It's one of those ordinances that we passed. We probably spent 6 months passing it because of questions and concerns, and we made some changes. But it appears like every time we have an annexation or some new development occurring, that we always have to provide waivers. And I'm not too sure if we could take care of that or not, if we have to look at it on a case-by-case basis.
Well, the waivers aren't always bad. I mean, I voted against the Walgreens project just for that very reason, because we were creating more driveways, and the idea of the access management ordinance is not to do that.
Right, it's create less driveways.
But, you know, we've got a couple of cases tonight where I don't know how you allow the project without doing it. So, yeah, we probably need to rework that.
The ordinance requires that the driveway on Highway 19 be 100 feet from the northern property line, and they want it to be 40 feet instead. And if I remember correctly, we asked Mr. Morris, who can waive any provision of the access management ordinance, if he thinks it's impractical. I believe we asked Larry if he wanted to waive this or not, and he said no, he didn't, and he can correct me if I'm wrong about that. That's the way I remember it. But so that's why they're asking for the waiver. And pros and cons, I'm no traffic engineer. The access management ordinance was developed with the involvement of Roger Dyer, and he thought the 100-foot distance from the property line was reasonable. That's why it ended up in the ordinance. Not sure what to say beyond that.
Are there any drawbacks whatsoever? Larry, maybe you need to answer this if you're familiar with the property, too. Do we need to pass this in order to get the job going? Are there any drawbacks to this any major things, consequences that we should know about?
I visited the site late last week to check on the progress of it. They've made very good progress. And I would have to withdraw my objection to the 40 feet. Ed is correct. On paper, it looks like you can move it very easily. But when you start looking at it, that would actually put if you moved another 60 feet down with that driveway, it starts getting a little bit too close to the crossroad there, Shiloh Heights.
Right.
So I would like to, publicly state I need to withdraw that objection. They have done a very nice job with the connector of that roadway to Shiloh Heights. If you look on the back of that And what that will do is that will allow the truck traffic that they have to have a much cleaner and smoother entry and exit into the quick shop itself. Mm-hmm. That way the vehicles can turn in and they'll be more or less protected, so you don't have a car turning in straight into cars there at the gas pumps.
Yeah.
So I think it's probably the best design for that particular area.
Well, that's what I was thinking, too. It doesn't look bad as far as the flow.
Correct. And once you see it on the ground, too, if you go visit the site, it definitely makes sense what they've done here.
Yeah. Oh, okay. That's I wanted your view on it. I'm sure we all did. Thank you, Larry. Thank you, Ed. Okay.
Mr. Mayor.
Yes.
I'd just like to say that, in the investigation of it, the citizens out in around this area has been very pleased with this addition to their community. And then I'd also like to just thank the owner of the property, because there were several problems that we ran into on the first reading of this, and I think he accommodated us with that as far as the canopy and toning down the canopy and reducing one of the entrance ways. So I'd like for us to go forward with this.
Mm-hmm. Now, the owner is... Just come up and introduce yourself to us, if you would, so we'll know.
Joey Hayward.
Joey.
126 Jumper Road, Prosperity, South Carolina. I'm representing Triple H Development, which my son and myself own. And we're really pleased with the area, too, because we first bought the property about 3 years ago. We really didn't know what we were going to do with it. And I know y'all ready to go home, because I am too, but I'll give you a little speech anyway.
Oh, no. No, we're okay. We're
okay. I'm starting. Seriously, yeah.
You had quite a challenge to improve that piece of property.
Don't worry. I tried to challenge. Mm-hmm. But, once we purchased the property and we'd done some surveys, and convenience store was one of the things that was recommended for that area. And, we've seen a lot of convenience stores, and I know all of us have, because we use them all the time, but we decided we wanted to build a convenience store that Aiken could be proud of. And we thought we did. We think we are, anyway. So, and we want to be part of the community. The people have just been outpouring with praise of what we've got out there. And so we're real pleased with it. Now, we have some more property adjacent to that we plan to develop in a later date. Mm-hmm. If the economy hadn't turned so bad, we'd probably be doing it now. Mm-hmm. It's not real good right now.
Yeah. Well, Joey, I think all of us remember what that looked like just a few years back.
We appreciate it.
And it does look nice.
Thank you very much. We appreciate it. And like I said, the community has really been supportive.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Thank y'all.
Thank you.
Good job.
All right, do we have a motion and a second?
So moved, Mr. Mayor, to approve the...
All right.
Second.
We've got second also. Any other comments? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Item 2, approval of a historic marker at Highland Park Drive and Highland Park Terrace. Mr. LaDuke.
Yes, about a month or so ago, we had some neighbors from this area come to the city council when SEG came through there and cut down most all the trees. It probably was a blessing in disguise that that's possible with SEG cutting down trees. But we've been able to go in there and put some landscaping in. Mm-hmm. A historical marker now will be going in there right at the steps leading up to what was the Highland Park Hotel at one time. So with this, you see the verbiage that's going to be on the marker. I believe the marker is already in, and they're just ready for this approval so that we could they could set a date to go ahead and have the marker installed at that location. These type of markers need to have city council approval, so for your consideration tonight, this is approval of a historical marker recognizing the Highland Park Hotel to be located at the intersection of Highland Park Drive and Highland Park Terrace.
Okay, sir. Thank you. Do we have a motion and second?
I move we accept this.
All right.
Second.
Okay. Any discussion? Show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. While we are talking about that, right down a ways, just a short ways, there are a number of several trees that have been cut down. They're still there. not in the immediate area, but you have to go down about, I don't know, 20 feet maybe or less, and look right up on the bank. See them from the road, isn't it? And it's a fairly big size.
On the north side of the road?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Item 3, budget request from Cumbie Center, from the Cumbie Center. Mr. LaDuke, please.
This was an unusual request, and therefore I wanted to bring it to City Council. Requests of this nature under $25,000 is allowed within the budget for the city manager to make those changes. But again, because it was an unusual request and the first time ever, I'm bringing this to City Council for your action so that, number one, you know about it and know what's happening. Every year, the city of Aiken receives money through assessments and fines that are mandated by the state legislature to be used for victim services. We have 1.5 employees that help those individuals out, whether it be a spouse that was abused or the children that are involved in a crime victim. And so those individuals at public safety, that's their day in and day out job. There are a couple agencies in town that deal strictly with victims. One is the Child Advocacy Center, which council has approved in the past several budgets for funding. One from the building that they built, which is going to have a grand opening, I believe, on February 15th, ribbon cutting. And we have put money in the budget to help with the funding, which is very much allowed by the state legislature to use the money for that thing. And then there's the money that the Cumbie Center, and they're dealing with families, women who have been abused. And like with so many other agencies, they have a shortfall this year and are seeking some funds. We do have money. Maybe it's just me, but I always like to keep a little bit of reserve in case we ever have situations like this. But right now, as of the last month, let me look at this here, we had reserves of over $60,000 set aside to provide for situations like this. If council would approve what I'm asking for tonight, a one-time gift now, and then we would in the future put that within the budget line item and balance that every year. That's a standalone budget where we look at the money that we receive versus the money that we'll spend, and the two have to obviously balance with one another. And so we would have a line item for the Child Advocacy Center and one for Cumbie Center. So for your consideration tonight, this is a request to help fund the Cumbie Center, their regular operation with the Cumbie Center, using the victim service funds, and then to place that in the 2009-2010. I'm suggesting that we would give them up to $10,000 as a one-time gift right now out of the $60,000 that we have in holding funds for this type of situation.
Do we know what their budget cut was? They indicated the budget was cut, which...
I believe there is a council member here that's familiar with the situation that might be able to answer that. I do not know that answer.
It's been substantial, Mayor, and this agency has been eligible for these funds over the years and have not...
Never requested it,
and so now they're in need of funds. Anytime the economy gets as bad as it is right now, you see an increase in the number of women that have to go into the shelters. And
sure.
So when they do go, they take families, sometimes young children, with them.
Mm-hmm.
The agency work has been in Aiken for, I guess, as long as I've been on council, 88. And this is the first time they have requested these funds. And I'm going to ask council to be generous and give them as much as you, the limit that you have set forth here, because they really do need it.
Okay.
They need it badly.
Well, thank you for the background. Okay, and you're saying $10,000?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Do we have a motion? Second?
I'd like to move that we give them the $10,000 now, and that we be a part of the budget, at least to the extent that the Child Advocacy Center is already.
Second.
Okay, we have a second. Any other discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor?
They do a great job.
Passes. Passed unanimously. One quick question. Anybody have a appointment that they want to make?
I need to appoint someone to the DRB board, and I have an application from Dennis W. Terry, 310 York Street, who has asked to be appointed, and I'd like to go ahead and make that.
Okay. What was that name again, Beverly?
Dennis W. Terry.
Oh, Dennis. Okay. And where does he live?
310 York Street,
okay.
Southeast.
Yeah, I thought so. I know.
You know him?
Know them, yes.
Yeah.
Okay, is that it? That'll be next time.
There we go.
Okay. Thank everybody.
We have something from the Environmental Committee. Is that just a memo to us? Or?
That's just a memo that they gave to me, and I was just responding to them that the money that they're asking for, we'll try to go ahead and get their project that they would like to have. I think it's like $300,000 in the next once in sales.
I went to the function that they sponsored at Home Depot on January 3rd, that recycling event. And let me tell you, that is well supported by the community. We had the shredding company from Augusta come in, and they were working, I think, most of the day. And God love them, they had four or five trucks. So they were prepared for a lot of business, and they caught a lot of business.
Are they coming back? Is that what I'm hearing?
We do it once a year.
Yeah. I've been holding my stuff waiting for that truck to come back.
What?
You missed it.
Can you hold it another year?
When will they?